He says, welcome to the frickin' Guardians of the Galaxy.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 70 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
I kind of feel like I want to celebrate 70, yay, but it's not really anything, is it?
We can always
it's
do
just
it another
a,
way.
It's just a round number, but it's not really a milestone in any way.
Is the next one really 100, or should we try and do something for 75?
75, yeah.
We can. That sounds like a plan.
Or your one-year anniversary, which is something like 76.
Yeah, that's not far away.
Yeah, I'm down.
We'll do that. We'll have a party for that one.
Yeah, all right then. Lots coming up on the show today. We're going to go through all of the various elements later on. But before we do, there's just a few things I want to talk about. As ever, I say this every week, our listenership is getting bigger and bigger. Any new listeners, please do follow us on social media. Twitter at STTE Podcast and facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. Something that I've noticed as well, not only are we influencing a lot of listeners, bringing new listeners on board, we continue to influence Hollywood. We've talked about this before. Every time we come up with an idea on the podcast, 2 weeks later, someone in Hollywood then announces that it's going to happen. We have these kind of clairvoyant powers or something. And it happened again, didn't it, Gemma? You sent me a text the other day.
I did. A few weeks ago, we had our top three best 60s film. And Ben pointed out a very good film. It's called Fahrenheit 451.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? Hollywood have announced there's going to be a special. They're going to remake it with Michael B. Jordan and Michael
and
Shannon.
Michael Shannon, yeah. It's, you know, it's a film that no one really talks about. No one's mentioned in years. We mention it. Boom.
We need a
it's
bit
happening.
But I think Cut of the Bunts would be nice. Hollywood, if you're listening.
S-Town Podcast, which you recommended on the last episode, mm-hmm. was doing pretty well. Went on yesterday. It's number one in the whole world of all podcasts.
Yeah.
So,
there we go.
Do you know what I mean?
You're welcome, S-Town
think,
Podcast.
I think it was before. But okay.
We can say a little bit. It was ours.
The thing is, I definitely think that there is someone in Hollywood who is a fan of the Skip to the End podcast. So Mark, when you've been sending out all these key rings of late, have you had to post any to Hollywood, California?
There was two.
Oh.
So you never know. It could be a couple of people. But on this note, let's talk about the possibility of Mac and Me 2 finally coming out. Imagine that.
If only.
The people are waiting.
If someone out there is listening who has that magic button, who's pressing it after each episode, just imagine the news in 2 weeks. Mac and Me 2 is finally here.
Return of
just
the
leaving
Mac.
It there.
Yeah, I can't wait personally. And I'd like to think that we'll be involved in the production somehow. Going back to the key rings though, Mark, you've been giving away these key rings to our loyal listeners. And people have been going nuts for them, haven't they?
That's it. You know, we've given away iWatches, which are unbelievable. We've given away TVs.
Projectors.
But for some reason, everyone loves these little pieces of plastic with our logo in them, mm-hmm. which is amazing. And they're numbered. And after 100, they're gone forever. But what I will say is stick around on this episode because on competition time coming up, there will be another chance to get these magical, limited edition, exclusive podcast key rings.
Leave them dangling.
Got a little bit sexy at the end there. I've been really enjoying the photos that people have been putting up of them, you know, not just on their keys. People have posted them in front of their spice racks, which
yes,
was bizarre, but okay. It's, one guy had a little Darth Vader toy holding it.
Groot as well, with Groot, the like neon light behind it.
Psycho son of a bitch.
No one's put it in their nan's coffin yet. Along with
no,
the T-shirt.
Good.
Still waiting.
Don't do that. I want to know who got number one, because as you said, you've numbered them. And yep. loads of people have put them online, pictures of them, with like number 28 of 100 and so on. Who's number one?
And please, I don't know.
Please, whoever got number one, take a photo, put it on Twitter. We want to know.
And you can win another keyring.
Before we move on, there's one other thing I wanted to discuss. We have a lot of reviews for our podcast. On iTunes, we've got 100-odd reviews, all 5-star, of course, because we're that damn good. But every now and again, people will go onto blogs and so on and write up proper full reviews about us. And someone did that this week. It's a website called smorgasbordpod.wordpress.com. And it's smorgasbordpod, spelt S-M-O-R-G-A-S-B-O-R-E-D-P-O-D. So go and check them out. They did a write-up about our podcast, a little review, and were very complimentary, and we want to thank them very much for that. There was one little section, though, that I wanted to read out, because I really enjoyed this bit. So here's a quote. The strengths of this podcast are undeniable. The chemistry between all three hosts is off the charts. Ben's more laid-back, dry sense of humour contrasts nicely with Mark's hyperactive nerdery. And Gemma's eardrum-shattering laugh is a thing of legend. All true.
Absolutely spot on.
I'll take it, yeah.
If we had a movie out, that's what I want to see on the top, you know, from these guys. So fair play.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you again.
So
yes.
Thank you, Smorgasbord Pod. Mm. Please go and check out their website. They do a podcast of their own. Check that out too. Speaking of podcasts, what have we got coming up? Gemma, what is our main review today?
We're only reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It's here.
It is here.
I can't whistle. I just realised. That was Ben.
And it's a bit of a milestone for us, isn't it? Because our very first podcast was Guardians of the Galaxy 1, Volume 1. So we're coming kind of full circle.
I think I read that James Gunn wanted to release it as we hit episode 70.
He did, yeah.
So consider it.
Thanks, James.
Because that was the person you sent the keyring to, Mr. J. Gunn, Hollywood, California.
It all clicks and makes sense.
Mark, what is our topic of discussion?
Top three most annoying characters in the history of film.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
It's been a while, hasn't it, since we've had a good old rant.
We love a rant.
We do it every episode.
And our rewatch this week is Kids, a mid-90s controversial film, which I hadn't seen since it came out, so it was a bit of revelation watching it again. So that'll be an interesting discussion. Gemma, who are we mass debating over?
This time around, it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Ooh.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
One of the greats. One of the all-time greats. And Mark, we've got a brand new quiz. Give him the title.
Whose tagline is it anyway?
Now, usually our quiz titles are fairly vague, but I think you can figure out what this quiz is from that, can't you, quite easily.
I'm really looking forward to this because you guys have no idea what this is about right now.
Well,
we've got an idea.
Completely in the dark.
2 plus 2.
And people love our game shows.
They do indeed. Although, I want to put this out there, it's not going to be as good as Hi-Fi. No. It's going to be good, but we've put too high a bar. Anyway, let's get started.
Right then, guys, let's kick things off with the topic. It's the top three most annoying characters in the history of film. So, hell of a lot to choose from. You said, Ben, we rant quite a lot, but it's been a while since the topic's not been really positive and what we love about films or certain genres. So this is a good excuse to let off some steam. And those annoying characters we've got under your skin for so many years, we're going to find out about. So on that, Ben, let's hear your first choice.
Oh, the first thing that came into my head when you announced this topic was this particular character. It's a character called Kelly Curtis, more commonly known as the Little Gymnastics Bint from The Lost World Jurassic Park.
Oh, I didn't even know the name.
No, she doesn't need it. But it's the worst character. Played by an actress called Vanessa Lee Chester. She's the daughter of Jeff Goldblum's character. She stows away and goes to Isla Sauna with him, and then she's attacked by velociraptors, these monstrous killing machines, velociraptors, and she defeats them by doing a bit of high bar action.
Oh, for crying out bloody loud.
It is one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen in film. Plus the fact she's just a whiny little girl as well. Add that into the mix, that she's just an annoying character before she starts doing flips and shit. She really, really burns my blood. And I don't like that film very much anyway. I think it was a colossal letdown compared to the first. But she epitomises everything that was bad about it. Gymnastics? Defeating dinosaurs? You having a laugh? Oh, God.
Listen to the blood going through his veins right now.
Listen, I can see it.
Oh, crap. Oh. I remember when this came out, and I went to see it, and a friend of mine at school, she went to see it as well. And afterwards, she came back and I asked her if she liked it, and she said no, because the bit at the end when the T-Rex gets loose in San Diego, she said that was unrealistic. Now, we're talking about a film where dinosaurs have been brought back to life. Let's not worry about realism. That said, I think it does stretch credibility a little bit when you've got little girls defeating dinosaurs with gymnastics.
It's really, really hurt, hasn't it?
I can believe that we can bring back dinosaurs from amber, but I do not believe that a small child can defeat a dinosaur with gymnastics. I won't have it. I will not suspend my disbelief for that. No, not having it, Spielberg. No.
Are you worried now that Jurassic World 2 might incorporate some gymnastics to kind of be a homage to the original?
It wouldn't be that. It'd be something more modern, like parkour or some shit. not that that's modern. No one's done that in like 5 years.
Dabbing to defeat the T-Rex.
Oh, God.
Dab, dab, dab.
Oh, God, no. Christ. I want to turn my own eyes out right now.
The reason you're so disgusted is because you know it might happen.
Yeah, I do.
It's terrifying.
I do.
And it will happen because everything we say on this show always happens.
We're filming right now as well.
We've only got ourselves to blame.
Oh, good Lord. Do you know what annoyed me? I was going to watch the whole film, But I thought, I can't sit through it. So I just watched the clips of the girl on YouTube. And I'd completely forgotten that one of the co-stars of this film is Julianne Moore.
Oh my Jesus. God. Oscar winning.
What was she doing? Slumming it in this.
That's a shame. We all have to start somewhere. Poor Bint.
The paycheck would have been worth it, but it would have. Disgusting.
Yeah. And Vince Vaughn's in it as well. It's a really, that's about really
right.
Odd cast.
That's about right for him, old Vincey.
Old sleepy eyes Vaughn.
Right, I'm angry. Let's move on.
Have some cider and take a breather, because you are so high.
Lovely bit of brothers.
Gemma.
Yeah.
Not so much anger at the moment, but it's coming. I can sense it already.
My first choice, it pains me, this first choice, because I wanted to be fair. And when I do watch this element of the film, it gets my blood going. My first choice is Wendy Torrance from The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen a few people say this on social media, so you're not alone.
Good. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to justify, because this is one of my all-time favourite films and I love everything about it. She starts off okay, but this is a woman that's put her life on hold just so her husband can go play caretaker in an old abandoned creepy hotel. Oh, God. The book, she's actually quite a strong character in the book. And the novel's fantastic. It's completely different from what the film version is. So the story is, with Shelley Duvall, she didn't get a lot of sympathy on the set. It was reported that Kubrick actually gave her a very hard time and she had to retake a lot of scenes. Because of this, she actually went through a nervous exhaustion process. So she lost a lot of hair, a lot of weight. She was a shell of a woman. But I don't care. I'm sorry. Because she's... The reason being, women... in films should have a quite a nice strong kind of character that they play. It's always nice to see a female kick a bit of ass and stand up for herself. She's a wreck of a woman in this. She does not, she's like a limp lettuce. She doesn't stand up for herself. She doesn't really sort of take the bull by the horns and confront Jack. She's so submissive, and she's not, that's not who Wendy is in the book. It's just, it gets to the point where she makes my teeth itch and I just want to slap her or shake her like a British nanny and go, come on, woman up, like, do what you need to do, protect that kid of yours and fucking do something. Don't
language,
just...
language, come on.
This is a family podcast.
She always reminds me of Adrian from Rocky. She's got that kind of really? Look about her, like she works in a pet shop and she's a bit scrawny and a bit weird, but... You're acting like she's not got much on her plate and she should, like, woman up, you said.
Yeah, she looks
her
like...
Her bloke's after her with a fucking axe.
Yeah, and he's possessed by some sort of evil spirit.
He's pretty damn scary. You're not going to be like, all right then, come on, give us your best shot.
Well, I would.
All right then.
All right, brilliant, we'll set that up.
Don't Greg, if you're listening, right, we're going to possess you.
No.
Give you a huge weapon.
But hey, I don't look like I'm going to be the person that's going to be picked last in gym class. She does. She looks like she's sort of like the ringer of some sort.
What's with the gym today? The gymnasium, the gymnastics? Hey. This is gym special. Jim Bowen's back. I think you're being harsh.
No, I don't think I am.
She is annoying, I'll grant you that. Incredibly annoying.
It's the fact she just wails and shrieks, kind of like me in a way. But, you know, I identify that and I admit that. But I'd just like to see her have a bit of a backbone. Do it. Just
anger.
I feel like I'm like Shia LaBeouf in that YouTube video now. Like, just do it.
But it's one of your favourite films, so it must be really bloody hard.
That's why this topic was so good to look at. I didn't want to go for the obvious. And it pains me, because it's The Shining. It's
Mine's not so obvious.
Mm. Here we go.
I don't think you'd guess mine in a million years. So it's Gloria from White Man Can't Jump.
Who plays Gloria? Is it Rosie Perez? Oh, yeah. God. You could have just said Rosie Perez in anything because of that accent.
My God. So the accent is bad, as you said, but she is annoying in this because I love Woody Harrelson. I think he's a great actor and he's the cool guy. Even though he's failing throughout this film against Wesley Snipes, he's never as good. He's always making stupid bets and he's always failing. And even when you're rooting for him thinking he's done it, he's got money, he's finally got all this stuff going for him, he still has to push it too far and end up with nothing. That's not the worst thing that's ever happened to him. Waking up next to her is the thing that's going to completely destroy him and be worse than losing any amount of money. You've seen the scene where she's constantly screaming at him. His name's Billy. Billy! 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 Like this. Constantly. And how annoying is that?
And that's
10 seconds.
That's bored into
you get this for about 20 minutes when he's about to play his big game and return game. Then she goes on Jeopardy to win all that money. Oh my God, her voice goes through me and she's such an annoying... This is the topic, but she makes my blood boil and I think if she wasn't in the film, it would be so much better than it could have been.
Yeah, I would agree. But I would say that I could make that argument about any Rosie Perez character. Mm-hmm. She just goes through me because of that voice. She may very well be a good actress, but I can't see or hear past the voice to see if she has any talent.
Shame, really. She can't do anything about it.
No.
It's not like she can work on it.
She needs some helium.
She needs to be a
high
mime.
Five with her.
Oh my God, that would just... it would be like scanners. Like heads would just explode. I don't know if I'm ready for that, guys.
Come on, Ben. I've seen you cool down a bit now. And there's no sort of shaking.
Oh, it's going to come back up, though. Actually, what I want to do is get away from women. I think we're being very misogynistic here. Let's bring some men into the mix.
Yep.
So my next annoying character is the character of Alder Snow, played by Russell Brand in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Oh, God. So in this film, Russell Brand plays this character, Snow, who is a rock star. And effectively, it's just Russell Brand playing himself. Because Russell Brand believes himself to be a rock star. He ponces around like Keith Richards, dressed as a comedy pirate. He thinks he's the dog's bollocks, and he's not. He's a twat. And he's a twat in life, and he's a twat in this film. And it ruins what is otherwise a really fun, enjoyable film. Have you seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. And he ruins it with his bullshit. I can't stand the man. I don't know why he has any kind of career. I certainly don't know why. He's an actor. Let him do his stand-up. Let him do his political diatribes. But don't let him anywhere near Hollywood, for Christ's sake. Because he's shit.
And he had sex with Katy Perry.
Which really annoys me. Even more than that film.
That's a weird thing, because that film was all right.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
It was genuinely funny.
And then they did a follow-up to it, focusing on his character, getting to the Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
Exactly the same thing, wasn't it?
I never watched the follow-up, and
no,
I won't.
No.
Follow-up's all right. Forgetting Sarah Marshall's much better.
The problem was he was paid to be himself. So when he turned up on set, it was like, oh, wow, you've put so much heart and soul into this performance. You're just so wacky and out there. No.
And it's not how Brits are. I'm sure Americans watch that and go, that's what British people must be like. It's nowhere near it.
My heart is like racing. I just hate him so much. Yeah. I don't know that he has any redeeming factors.
I would say he's intelligent. When I listen to his political stuff, he uses big words. So for me, I'm like, wow. I'm blown away by it.
That's three syllable words. Blows you away, pal. That's not proof of anything.
But yeah, he is an absolute...
tool.
Yes. Dick. I'm not going to try and swear as much, but I can see why you get frustrated. And luckily, we haven't seen him in anything for a long time. No. He's kind of just doing stand-up.
Yeah, I think Hollywood got wise to the fact that he just plays himself in everything.
Didn't he bomb at the Video Music Awards a few years ago at MTV as well? Like, they hated him.
Yeah, it's because he's not funny.
Yeah, so welcome to the club, Hollywood.
Is yours a male?
It is.
Yes.
It is. And I'm going to give you this quote and see if you know exactly who I'm talking about. I have an 11-inch penis around.
Someone from American Pie or something?
Oh, yeah. Steve Stifler. Massive bellens, and not his appendage either. So he's played by Sean William Scott, who, let's face it, is pretty much typecasted as this goofy jock. He's been in such classics as Road Trip, Dude, Where's My Car, and Gary the Tennis Coach.
And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Don't forget that one.
Of course.
Moving on. So he plays the jock very, very well, but you don't want to be around someone that looks like he's going to give you a wedgie at any given moment. But he's just an absolute jerk. He thinks the whole world revolves around him. This sort of real guy who's probably fun to be around with at parties, but as soon as you sober up, you know this guy's an absolute bellend. You don't want to be anywhere near him. He does get his comeuppances in some of the films as well. Like, for example, when he's drinking one of the lads' jizz in a beer.
Oh. Gets pissed on as well.
He does get pissed on, and he likes it.
And people wonder why I've never seen American Pie.
Rewatch is coming up.
Fuck off. Veto.
There's only eight of them as well. You know.
Only. But he's got zero respect for girls. He's got no kind of that attention to detail to them, but he just sees them as objects. He's probably the type of person that has a roofie dealer on speed dial as well. He's just... Everybody, I believe this, absolute true to fact, everybody has known a Stifler or has met a Stifler, and if you haven't, you probably are Stifler.
Wow. Some listeners are thinking about that right now, that thought.
We got real deep there. We got balls deep there.
The problem is, when they released the films, obviously everyone else went off and did stuff, so people like Tara Reid went off and...
great example.
Stuff. Yeah. He clung on and was still doing, like... American Pie, the second reunion, like, and the band camp. And he still came in being stiffer when Jim went off and did, you know, amazing films.
Yeah. See, I do feel bad for him, though, the fact that he's been typecast, because he is better than that. He does deserve more. So have you ever seen Goon?
I've heard of it.
Not seen it.
He's exceptionally good in that, and nothing like that kind of Stifler douchebag character. Even in Southland Tales, which is a mental film, go back and listen to our last episode to hear me talk about that. He's great in that, and he's certainly not being a Stifler-type character. People need to take more of a chance on him, I think.
Hopefully they will now, listening to this.
Well, of course they will now.
I'll watch Goon.
There is a second one coming up.
There is, yeah.
I'm going to follow up with just two words. I was surprised it hasn't been mentioned already. Little Nicky.
Oh, wow. The voice.
Oh, it's very voice-based, your choices so far.
Well, Adam Sandler is not the most respected or loved on this podcast, is he? He's not going to be a family member that's, you know, our father himself. We will be talking about shortly. But Little Nicky is a shit film. It's not funny. The devil's sent back to Earth and he's just being an idiot. He's being so over the top. He's even being more Sandler than he can be, being Adam Sandler. He's playing on it so badly and it just sucks. It isn't funny. The voice is driving me insane just thinking about it. But watching it for an hour and a half, why does he do it? Is it funny for one scene? Yes, it might be. Then it goes back to normal. It's like us doing High Five for a whole episode. We know our limits. We know what works, and we cut it off at the right point. Why did they let him do it? Anyone know any backstory here? Why it happens?
I wish I had the answers right now. Yeah. I've got nothing.
No, and also, you've kind of ruined the surprise, but I did have a contract lined up for High Five the movie. It's all right. I'll rip it up. Don't worry.
But that film just isn't funny, and we've given Adam Sandler credit when he's being okay in some stuff. Punch Drunk Love was all right. In Happy Gilmore, he gets it right. He's funny.
Yeah.
Now he's doing Netflix 10 films, 20 films. Little Nicky is the film for me that is his worst, unfunny, stupid, over-the-top waste of money.
I absolutely agree. There's a weird thing now. There's a weird disparity with Sandler. He does one of two things in his modern films. He either plays himself with his normal voice, and that's when he's clearly phoning it in. He's utterly disinterested. He's just getting a pay packet. Or when he actually wants to appear interested, he just puts on a wacky voice. You know, he's actually trying. He's maintaining this character. It's still shit. But that's the only proof you ever get that he's actually putting any effort these days. If he does a daft voice, he's at least trying. That's all I can give you for him now. But Little Nicky sucks. And it really annoys me that Ozzy Osbourne's in that film. What are you doing, Oz?
Ozzy now is the type of guy that'll just do anything. What do we see him in recently? He was
in Ghostbusters last year.
There you go. Do you know what I mean? That just completely says it all.
Yeah.
A film I'll never watch again. Let's not talk about it anymore. It's had too much airtime. Someone might listen and go, oh, I'll check that out. Don't. Ben.
Okay. So all this prior to now was just preamble, man. That was just warm-up. I am now about to name the most annoying character in arguably, in my opinion, the worst film in history. And it's Forrest Gump.
Oh!
I hate that film so very, very much. I think it is saccharine bullshit. It's completely illogical, stupid, and idiots fall for it, and I despise it. And it's summed up by the lead character, Gump himself. Journey! I love you, Journey! Oh, shut the fuck up. Oh, my God. Everything about him just makes my skin crawl. I just...
How many times have you watched the film? Just once?
I've seen it more than once, because it's one of those that's just been on TV a million times throughout the year. So I've seen it a few times, I'm sure, and it just gets worse every single time. And I've grown to love Tom Hanks in latter years. I think he's done some fantastic work. He is one of my favourites. But that was the period of his life when he was just doing Oscar bait movies. And this was the Oscar baitiest of all of them. You know, you play someone with a kind of mental disability and you're, you know, it's the old joke from Extras, isn't it? If you play that kind of character, you're going to have awards falling at your doorstep. And he did have that. But it just makes the film unwatchable. That coupled with the fact that the film is shit. Why would this guy be interacting with presidents and, you know, famous people and then investing in Apple and becoming a millionaire and then running across all of America? Why would all of that happen at all? And then why would the love of his life just die of AIDS at the end? It's this uplifting story where he does all these amazing things, earns this money, earns people's respect, meets all these people, and then his missus dies of AIDS at the end. Why?
Shame. The thing is, that is the ultimate Oscar film. They've got in there the death of the mother, the big, horrible story, racism.
Yeah.
You know, yes. Bubba Gump, the way they accept
Vietnam,
him and all this.
Vietnam, a social commentary.
John Lennon.
Oh,
everything you could name in
New
a 2.5-hour film. Disabled legs working again, you know.
It's got it absolutely all. We're really trying to sell
adoption for his mom.
Oh,
who is she?
Where does she come from?
And the thing that really pisses me off is that Hanks won the Oscar for Best Actor for this. Do you know who he beat out that year?
Go on.
Two of the people he beat out, John Travolta for Pulp Fiction.
Oh.
And Morgan Freeman for Shawshank Redemption.
Holy hell.
Jesus.
Yes.
Wow.
And that, Jenny, that one.
I don't know how to follow that up, so I think the only way to do it is give Gemma your final choice.
No messing around, it's Jar Jar Binks.
Yes.
Yeah. He can go to hell, first and foremost. Gun-gan, well, like gone. But
that was a reach. That was
terrible.
Forced.
But that was one of the most pointless, annoying, spineless, most ridiculous character I think I've ever seen in movie history. We do research for this top three, so I had to watch The Phantom Menace again. I had to bleach my eyes following on from that film.
Me so not want to watch that again.
God. How rude. Fuck off. He's just a physical representation of an eye roll. He just gets under my skin so much that I just want to, I don't know, like flip a table or tear a wallpaper bit down or just do some kind of damage to know that this pain will end one day. He's just an absolute cock. You know, George Lucas had this idea that Jar Jar Binks was going to be this great big money spinner and this merchandise, like, money troll that was coming in. So loads of kids would be buying the figures, the posters, the games, everything. People would really react to it. And the people spoke and they gave George Lucas the middle finger and said, not on my watch, sunshine. And it bombed. And I feel really, really bad for the guy who voiced and did sort of the motion for it, Ahmed Best.
Ahmed Best, yeah.
And all he does now is just Jar Jar Binks voiceovers. He doesn't do anything of significance.
I bet he does all right on the convention circuit.
Yeah, he'll be at all the Comic-Cons just doing the meter, and then just gets please. 10 quid all day long.
I'll flip this table. I can't. I just...
Did you not go out and buy a plush toy and get the stickers? And
I
all
did,
that?
And then I proceeded to use it as a voodoo doll just so it would burn and die.
You were absolutely right, though, that it was cynical on the part of Lucas. He created this character. He wanted them to be the next Ewok or the next R2-D2 that kids would want to have the figure for, and it just proves that he'd lost it at that point. That was the evidence, if evidence was needed, that he had lost it.
I mean, Yoda had philosophical meaning and these great words of wisdom, and then this elephant cock sort of comes along and starts saying about how things are rude and no.
We need him here, I think, to be saying to you now and then on this episode, how rude, because you are being very potty mouthed, and I've seen tweets, I've seen a lot of comments. We need to wash our mouths out.
Well, pass me the soap because I'm done here.
I don't have anything to say on him. He was a given. I didn't even have to discuss him. He's the one. Every single person that voted on social media said this guy. He's disgusting.
I just feel exhausted talking about him. I really do.
I'm going to finish this off with a horror character. So, the Babadook. Little Samuel. My God, have you seen this film, Ben? No.
No.
As far as horrors go, to be honest, it did very well. The Babadook came from nowhere. People really enjoyed it, and it was really well done. But this little South African kid along.
Is this just an excuse for you to do your South African accent again?
I'm not doing it again. This little kid was being possessed by the Babadook. The story of the Babadook. And he came into the house and he terrorised the family. She's a single mom with just this kid. And this kid has the most annoying hair. He's so really pale. He looks really ill. Constantly shivering and being scared by this Babadook. And then we get, Mommy! Mommy! I'm so scared! I am not going down the same territory as last episode, but you need to see. I'm going to make you watch this, Ben. I'll buy you some beers and I will give you Chinese or Indian takeaway all night and pay for all your drinks just to sit there and watch this with me.
No, because you'll just be doing your South African accent in my ear all night.
Have you seen this film?
I have, yeah.
How much do you want to punch him? And in the end, this monster Babadook is attacking him. If I was the mum, I'd be like, go to town. Kill this little shit of mine. Because he's that annoying and that much of an...
Just step away, kill
him. Rip him to pieces and I don't care. Have the house. Have whatever you want. Take over my spirit. Just kill that little twat.
She's there doing paperwork to the Babadook going, okay, if I could just get your signature here. Yes.
Hold on. I thought it was Australian.
It might be. And now we go to social media.
Right, so let's go social media. Daryl at DPC78 said Ruby Rod from Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Very popular choice.
It's like the male Rosie Perez.
Yes.
Yeah. C-3PO in every Star Wars film he's ever been in.
Oh, I'm not having that.
No, he's nice. And the guy who's greased up playing sax in The Lost Boys. That's my favourite bit, The Lost Boys. Dolph Starbeam at Rollin_Thunder says Fabienne from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah, she's really annoying.
God.
Ruby Rod again from Fifth Element, and Uncle Billy from It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, I don't remember that film. But I'm sure it's annoying.
Video Negative at Video Negative says Rocco, the Boondock Saints, Jay of Silent Bob fame.
No, I will not have that.
Now Mark's going to flip a table.
And then Jim Carrey's the Riddler.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, it was annoying, but it worked.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be annoying.
Yeah.
Jim Boyd at JimBoyd79. Maguire's Peter Parker. I'm assuming Tobey Maguire.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The Jurassic Park kids.
No, well, one any of them from any of the Jurassic Park films. Yeah.
And Paris from Troy. Which,
Orlando Bloom. Annoying. He's just annoying in general.
Yeah. I've just deleted that film from my memory, if I'm honest. We Have a Hulk at We Have a Hulk Pod said Jar Jar Binks, obvs, I hear you. Skids and Mudflap from Transformers.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And Bella Swan from Twilight.
Oh, big time.
I thought you might have had her.
Old Slatjaw.
I've never actually seen Twilight, but I can only assume she's terrible in it.
Yeah, I shouldn't have to. Sudden Double Deep at STD Film Podcast says Kat Dennings Darcy in the Thor films.
Oh, I like her.
She's all right. Yeah, yeah. Johnny Depp's Willy Wonka. Yeah. And Christoph Waltz's Blofeld in Spectre, but in here it says Sphincter. So props to you, Sunny Double D.
Yeah, to be honest, I love that actor, but that character was not good.
I thought he was the least objectionable thing about that film. I thought he was fine. The rest of the film was shite.
Yeah.
Enraged Potato at Ordinary Magoo. I hope I said that.
See,
right.
It's not easy, is it?
No, it's
what,
not.
Reading?
Fergie from Judge Dredd.
Very.
Oh, God, yes.
So annoying.
Willy Wonka, Johnny Depp's Willy Wonka, and that bloody owl from Clash of the Titans.
That's very specific. But yeah, nice.
Martin Street at Martin the Geek said Tim from Jurassic Park, Fat Bastard from Austin Powers.
Yes. Yeah.
And absolutely Anakin Skywalker in Episode 2.
Yeah.
So yep.
He's just basically put here, stop talking about stand and do Jedi stuff. And then lastly, J Movie Talk podcast at J Movie Talk. Chaz in Constantine, Dakota Fanning in War of the Worlds.
That one came through from nearly everyone. Mm.
And then the final one, all the people stuck in the tunnel with Stallone in Daylight.
Brutal. I like the imaginative there. Really good thinking.
Yeah. I'm all amped up. I want to go and smash something.
Shall we? Who's got a sledgehammer?
Whose topic is it next? Can we have something not so angry?
Okay, how about on the next episode, we have a bit of a controversial chat. So why don't we talk about our top three addiction movies?
Mm.
Ooh.
We've been to our local View cinema to watch Guardians of the Galaxy 2, the next phase in the universe with James Gunn behind the helm. Set against the backdrop of the awesome mixtape 2, we're going to be continuing to follow the adventures of the Guardians themselves, Star-Lord, Groot, Gamora, Drax and Rocket. But this time sees the arrival of Peter's long-lost father named Ego. What does this mean for the new family function and what does it mean for the Guardians of the Galaxy?
He's also our father. I just want to just get that out there.
He was our father first.
Again, we announce him as our father. James Gunn announces him as the father in Guardians 2.
It all works together. I must warn everybody who's not yet to watch the film, there's going to be a lot of spoilers ahead. So check on our website. There's going to be times. Come back to us later once you've watched the film and see if you agree. This is a pretty big film for the year. A massive film, if I may. So rather than give our sentences and our first thoughts, I think we should do what we did with Rogue One. Let's have a three-word review, and we go from there. So I want to leave it to Mark.
Brilliant, but messy.
Okay. Ben?
Good, not great.
Gemma?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
This is going to be interesting. I think we've all got three different opinions.
Yeah, it would appear so.
Mm. All right then. So, Mark, I'd like you to elaborate why you said a good one, messy.
I went in there with very, very high hopes. very high expectations. The first film is probably my favourite Marvel film, maybe Captain America 2. It's between those two. The most fun we've had. We launched the podcast with it. It's a film that stays with me forever. It's the Star Wars of today. It's unbelievable. Everything was perfect. It shouldn't have worked. You see all these characters that you don't know anything about. There's no major backstory. This is the first time you get them. Now we're getting to find out more about these characters, the stories behind them, the way that they are, why they're there, and a lot more time to invest. And it felt like about 25 minutes too long, this film. I'm going to go into it in more detail once I hear some from you guys, but it got messy. This big final fight scene went on so long. There was so much happening, and there was so too much that I was getting frustrated. But I can't fault everything on it because it was visually incredible. It was an awesome little story. But my God, it was far too long and far too messy at times. And James Gunn should have gone in that editing suite and chopped a lot more. Ben.
Yeah, I echo all of that. I can't fault anything you've just said there. For me, it was a hell of a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, no doubt. But as much as I enjoyed the dialogue and as much as I enjoyed the character chemistry, I thought the story was a letdown. It didn't feel grand enough to me. There was just a whole lot of shit going on, but the story itself didn't feel big enough to stand alone. It felt like episode 2 of the Guardians of the Galaxy TV series. You know what I mean? It had that kind of smaller stakes feel to it. Even though it was about world domination, it felt small to me. It was just a lot of shit flashing by your eyes. So I didn't really enjoy that. And one of the things that you mentioned there, Mark, was one of the reasons why Guardians, the first one, was such this big impactful thing is because we didn't know these guys. Even as comic book fans, they're not a big deal, the Guardians, really. So everyone had kind of low knowledge about them, and we were then blown away by how great and interesting they were. We come into the second film with that full knowledge. We know who they are now. We know how they operate. So that kind of, that shock value or that impact is gone. Automatically, we've got one less thing to take from it. And I think that hurt the film. It then had to lean on the chemistry, which was good, and lent on witty dialogue, which again was good, but they just didn't marry it to a good enough story for it to reach the heights of the first one.
You said, was it love, love, love?
I said yes, yes, yes.
Okay, I don't listen to a word you say. Tell me why it's yes, yes, yes.
The chemistry alone, this is a film where the parts have been perfectly cast, but you really get a sense of the fleshing out of each of the characters. There's characters we didn't really know a lot about in the first film, such as Yondu and Nebula, but I feel they became almost three-dimensional. There was so much of a life to them that we didn't see in the first film, and I love the fact they had the opportunity to really go an extraordinary distance and show the audience that they're not just this typeface of what we knew from the first film. Everything about it for me, the humour was just dead on. It was even funnier than the first film I found. The music married up with the scenes well. It was just a good nostalgic fest of fun. And I just sat there watching it and just had this great big grin on my face, especially with the first opening number with Mr. Blue Sky. I absolutely adored it. And I'm so excited to go and watch it again.
See, it's interesting that you say that you can't wait to see it again, because my instant thought when I walked out of that cinema with Mark the other day was, I have no instant desire to see it again.
Really?
That's not to say I won't watch it again. Of course I will. I've seen all the MCU films multiple times. But when I think back to the first Guardians, as soon as I walked out of that cinema, I was like, I remember saying to you, Mark, we need to go and see this again. And we did, I think. We went and saw it the week after. When I came out of Doctor Strange, I was like, shit, man, that was so visually crazy. I need to see that again. This one, I came out of it like, yeah, I'll see it again when it comes out on DVD. I just don't have that urge that I must see it again.
And that speaks huge volumes for you.
Yeah.
Massive. Because Star Wars you saw 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. And it's straight after as well. Like, oh, it's Christmas time, let's go and see it again. And I'm kind of with you there. I want to kind of see it again on the big screen because the visuals were flawless.
Yeah.
And I think, and I said this on the way out to you, Ben, I think James Gunn invented some extra colours that I've never seen before and put them on that screen, because I've never seen anything so colourful and so flamboyant and just so... It's unbelievable. You know, to watch that in 3D was worth the extra couple of quid. I think it really worked. It looked unbelievable. The CGI is the best thing I've probably ever seen on a big screen. I really mean that as well. It's better than Star Wars. It's better than anything I've ever seen. And James Gunn is a genius. He is an absolute genius. It's always unfair because this film was always going to live in the shadow of the first one. It was always going to be. It always had the bar to reach. But I think Ben's nailed it. It's just the story. It didn't have grip me. I didn't care. Like, I love Kurt Russell. He is the greatest human being in the world, right? And we admit he is phenomenal as an actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's the father. So we get this whole, oh my God. And we get to see him turn evil and try and get his Star-Lord son to go with him. But that story isn't enough, is it?
It's
just what? Okay, so one guy's come along, he's told you that he's sorry for years of neglection, and now he's asking you to join forces with him and basically destroy the universe. That isn't enough to carry five other extra characters.
Exactly. It was just the story of one guy's heel turn.
Yeah, that was it. Exactly.
And it wasn't enough to hang a film on.
But I didn't even see that turn coming. Like, I'm not familiar with the comic book. I am not a comic book reader. But I loved it. I love the fact that he's just this really nasty character who only has his own interests at heart. He killed Peter's mother just for the fact that he wanted to see if this kid was going to be like him. That's nasty business. That's horrible. And I really, really responded to his villainous and his prowess because of that, especially with the epic battle towards the end. It worked for me. It worked for me.
But don't you think that battle was too long?
No.
That felt like the Matrix, third Matrix film or the second one, whichever one he's fighting Neo for 25 minutes in the street. He was going on and came to a skeleton and started to grow back and got put down to sand and back. And I was like, just die. Either die or just end this fight. This is too long. 25-minute battle is too long. Yeah. It felt like Batman versus Superman.
Oh, yeah.
And luckily, he didn't turn around and say, what? Your mum's also called Martha. That would have been it.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because Batman versus Superman hinged on mummy issues, and this one hinges on daddy issues. It's all about Peter growing up without parents, effectively, because his mum died young and he didn't know his dad. And they lean in too much to it. It's so heavy-handed. So he meets his real dad, Ego, and then his dad turns out to be a dick, and that breaks his heart. Then it turns out Yondu, this Ravager leader who's always been an arsehole to him, is his real daddy. You know, he's the one who was there looking after him. And it's so forced that Yondu, who's kind of a bad guy, but he's like an anti-hero, someone you love to hate, he then turns out to be this father figure to Peter, and then he dies, and they have this fancy funeral for him, and everyone's like, oh, he was my real daddy all along. He's fucking idiot. It's terrible. It's so forced, so heavy-handed.
I'll take it. I'm an effing idiot. I loved it. It really affected me. These last 10 minutes when he sacrifices himself just so Peter can live and carry on, and it was one of the most noble things he ever did in his life that he admitted to. I bought the ticket. I was going to get a mortgage with it. I was ready to have a long-lasting, committed relationship with it. I loved it.
I bet you also liked the scene where Peter and Ego had a game of catch with a ball of light.
No,
didn't
I didn't. I thought that was rubbish.
Thank God. That was the worst scene in the film.
I was like, bleh.
That was, yeah. Even at that point, I was like, just if you want to see a game of catch, it's only going to be between Johnny and Mark in the room. I'm sorry, but you know that's the way you do it in a field in America.
In tuxedos.
In tuxedos. Ridiculous. It's just trying to show this bond that isn't even. They're not even. He's never been in his life. Throwing a little neon thing is not going to bring it all together.
Yeah, Yondu did, though. He was there from the beginning.
But he was a dick. Treating him like shit.
But a lovely dick.
Threatened to eat him.
When you look at it on a flip side, you're like, oh, I see why he did it now. It's all right.
It felt shoehorned to me. I'd like to believe that was always the plan for Yondu from when they wrote the first film, that that's how they were going to bring him around in the second film, but I don't believe that to be the case. I think this is something they came up with when they were making the second film, which kind of negates some of the truths we learn in the first film. It just seems so shoehorned. It didn't work for me at all.
Should we talk about some other characters? Because we're doing what the film did, just focusing purely on those two. I absolutely love Rocket. Now, we got to see various different sides of him in this film. We got to see how powerful he really is. So when he goes out into the woods and he's kind of feel that they're getting threatened, that's when we really saw kind of a bit more of, God, he really is a force to be threatened with. The power and the evilness and the way he killed people was dark as hell. For Marvel, that was pretty hardcore, killing everyone, putting all bombs on them and wiping them all out. But we also saw a bit of a sensitive side to him, that he was getting told by all of the crew, why are you always being an arsehole? Do you want to be hated? And you saw this sensitive side to him, but we also saw how funny he can be.
Yeah.
And I did sit in the cinema laughing at every line he came out with. I think every joke he gave worked.
Yes, I agree. I think he was the funniest character. Him and Drax, I would say, arguably.
Yes,
those two were fantastic. My one worry when it came to the jokes, the one issue I had, is that there were a lot of sexually suggestive jokes, which seemed unnecessary for what is a family film. So, you know, Peter, when he first meets Aisha, he's making a joke about how he's going to show her how to reproduce the old way. And then when you first see Yondu, he is in what is clearly an alien brothel. And as the camera pans into him, he's doing up his fly. There's a lot of sexually suggestive stuff in it, which wasn't necessary. It wasn't in the first film. And there's plenty of other funny stuff like Drax and Groot. Why have that?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, and what is it, a PG or a 12
I thought
or something?
So, yeah, it seemed a bit much.
They dropped a few cuss words during the film
There's
as well.
Loads of shits. It was.
But how about the ultimate Star-Lord himself, Chris Pratt? And for me, he completely redeemed himself from the absolute shower of crap that was Passengers. This is him. He is Star-Lord personified. He's a great hero.
I'll give you that. He's born to play this role. Yeah. No one else could do it now. He is the one. He's the Robert Downey Jr. of Iron Man. He is brilliant.
He was fantastic, but I think the writers have let him down a little bit because we discover in this film that he's this celestial being, so he has these godlike powers, and then he loses them at the end of the film. I think they've shortchanged him. I think he should have kept those and been able to use those in fighting Thanos later on in you know, Avengers Infinity War. To bring that in, that idea that he's a celestial, and then he loses it. 2 hours later.
Yes.
What a waste.
Yeah, worthless now. Yeah. That is a shame because that would have been amazing. And even in the third film when he's really going up against it, but don't worry, this guy's got it covered. You can see shit that he can do now. Nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Weak.
Going back to Drax though, Dave Bautista is so, so good. He to me is the one character that couldn't be replaced by another actor. No one could do that role now. Dave Bautista owns that role. He is so dry and his interplay with Mantis. And I thought Pom Clementieff as Mantis was fantastic. She was arguably my favourite thing in the film. And their interplay was hilarious. Really like those two.
I was waiting for you to mention it because I'm not going to try and pronounce that name. And I was like, come on, one of you, please. But yeah, he's amazing, man. And like sometimes wrestlers, when they go into stuff, it's a cash-in. And I love The Rock and he's doing great stuff. But sometimes you just think, ugh, Batista, man. Like, he never needs to go back to the ring. That's it. He is made for life. He's got a future with Marvel. And he's just... I just love him. I don't love him that much in the ring as a wrestler and doing promos, but I love him as this character. Yeah. I've got a whole new love and respect for this guy.
He knew how to deliver everything.
Yeah.
Like a pro, like a proper acting pro.
He's got crack comic timing. The whole running gag between him and Mantis about how he doesn't find her remotely attractive was never not funny. They kept going back to that well and him making these awful remarks about her, and it was hilarious every time.
You are repulsive. What's wrong? I'm just imagining what it'd be like being intimate with you. It's just incredible. Absolutely awesome.
She was brilliant, though. I really hope we see a lot more of Mantis in the future films.
Yeah, really cool. Just very unique.
Yeah.
Look cool as well, the CGI of all the thing.
Even in the trailers, you thought she might be this sort of comic relief character, but there was so much emotion underneath it all.
Yeah.
Loved her. Really, really great character.
She was very close to being my favourite thing. My favourite thing in it was probably my favourite thing in the first Guardians film, though, and that's Karen Gillan as Nebula.
Oh, amazing. She's
so good. And I said this to Mark on the way out. The bald head and the blue makeup does it for me, man. I don't know why, but there is something sexy about that. Woo!
Yes, Nebula.
I'm going to test you.
So good, so charismatic, and such a badass. Love her.
So evil.
Yeah.
So good.
But she's got the right level of sass.
Yes.
You know, for a good, strong female character, which I love, she's got it.
She walks as well. She struts.
Yeah.
I think we should test him next week. We'll get Richard O'Brien around here and loads of blue felt tip pens and colour him in and say, right, prove it.
We'll go and see the Blue Man Group. Yeah. Have to hold me back from the stage.
What about Tobias from Arrested Development? Can he come?
I just blew myself.
The one character that is getting the most talked about stuff at the moment, the most figures, the most t-shirts, the most toys, little baby Groot.
Psycho!
Is there ever a more adorable, beautiful little creature ever being created by CGI in the history of the world?
It's amazing. And Gemma, you referred to it, that opening scene where he's just dancing along strutting. And that was a really clever scene. So the rest of the Guardians are fighting this big space slug creature, but the actual battle is never in focus. The focus is always on baby Groot, who's just strutting and dancing around. What was the song?
It was Mr. Blue Sky by ELO.
Yeah, so he's just enjoying that, getting his funk on, and you just see people coming into frame getting smashed around by this slug. That was really cool, and that opened the film in the right way.
I like the fact that they didn't overuse him. That was my one worry about watching this film, because it is such a big money spinner now. He's like the anti-Jar Jar Binks of the superhero world. But I was worried that it would be every single scene we would have baby Groot in it. But it was the right amount of scenes. So you weren't just going, oh God, here we go. Yeah, dancing tree, fun, severed toe, which was kind of fun. But he was used in the right context at the right time.
James Gunn does get balance right. That's one thing he does do well.
Yeah. You've got to say that it's the easiest money Vin Diesel has ever made.
Ever.
I mean, really. He probably had to record I Am Groot 3 times in just 3 different tones, and then they just loop it and repeat it and filter it and so on, and he'd have got paid millions.
Of course he did. It's Vin Diesel.
Good Lord.
You were just talking about that opening scene, which was incredible, absolutely unbelievable. But just after that, we saw Ego as a young father who's sort of 25 with his missus.
Yeah.
How good is it now getting that we have this young 25-year-old Kurt Russell looking absolutely pristine at 25. Yeah. And he's 55 now, nearly 60, something like that.
Marvel really are the pioneers of this technology. They did it really well in, was it Ant-Man when you see
it
Michael Douglas
yes.
on the start?
Yeah.
And they de-aged him and he looked great, but this was even better. It looked flawless. It looked like footage from one of Russell's 80s films.
Which is amazing. Yeah. Credit to him. Mm,
it's that long flaxen hair.
He is beautiful.
Oh, my God.
I don't mind him. I'm gay for him.
I bet he was spun by golden sunshine or something.
Hold on.
Oh, no, I can't gay my dad.
For one thing, he's your dad. And for another thing, you're cheating on Ryan Gosling.
You slut.
Oh, God, who could I choose out of them two? Or both?
You want it all. You're a bad one.
Don't say anything, mate. You've just admitted that you love men with blue hair.
Sure that Karen Gillan is a woman.
You didn't kick off when I said Richard O'Brien. You're like, I'm up for that. We talked a little bit about the baddie. Let's talk about the other baddies. The iconic named, what was it, something face?
Taser face.
Iconic names and then he forgets it. Brilliant.
I'm drinking too much cider today, but I liked the smaller bad guys that were also working for him. We had a lot of good sort of new characters introduced.
Yeah. I liked Aisha, sort of the gold-painted queen
cool.
of high priestess of the Sovereign. My favourite thing about the Sovereign is that when Rocket and Groot stole some batteries from them, they then decided to chase the Guardians, and they had these drones. So they were chasing them in these ships, but they were all controlled from their kind of throne room, and it was like playing an arcade game. And when they were firing their weapons, it was making kind of 8-bit arcade pow pow sounds. I thought that was really
that was
smart
awesome.
And really funny.
Or when one of them dies, and afterwards they're just like, oh, for God's sake. And so, they're like getting a proper huff about it. Yeah.
That was awesome.
That's really
very
like
cool.
I'd say one of my major issues with the film, I think sometimes the MCU can try too hard to shoehorn stuff from other films into its current films, and it can be a bit annoying. I think they didn't try hard enough this time. There's really no connection between this film and the wider MCU. There's no cameo other than your typical Stan Lee. There are no external cameos. And I think they should have used one to try and tie stuff together, especially when Ego was using his abilities to take over planets. You see Earth being taken over by this foam weirdness. All it would have needed was a 2-minute bit of Tony Stark or Spider-Man trying to fight it, just to link those two universes together.
I actually thought Kat Dennings was going to show up.
Anyone would have
done. Anything would have been good.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's shortchanged in a way. It's like,
that's a really good point. Anything, just the Avengers sign in the background of the building, just so you go, there we go, now it all makes sense. Because we are going to get these characters in the Avengers film, so we need something soon, because the Avengers films are coming out before Guardians 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So they're just going to suddenly turn up?
Yeah, Infinity War is next year, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
So you would have thought there would have been some hint that they're going to be linked to that somehow. Mm.
You watch now, the Blu-ray will come out and we'll have the Avengers logo in the background. Yeah. And like, hang on, this wasn't in the cinema. They've been listening to us again.
And the thing is, if they didn't, you know, we may have missed it, but I don't think we did. If they didn't do it, what the hell were they doing with the 5 post-credit sequences? Mm. 5 is mental. That is too many.
It was
too much. They could have used one of them to link it back into the main universe.
I didn't like that. I didn't like the end. I didn't want 5. It was overdone. And I even stayed to the very last one again, spoilers, but it was just a little bit more of a play on the whole cameo from Stan Lee. And it wasn't funny. Like, guys, where are you going? It's like, ugh.
Yeah, the Stan Lee one wasn't great. The 2 of the 5 that I did like, I like the one where you see Stallone get together with his team, because in the comics, that is the original Guardians of the Galaxy team from 1969, who predates the version of the team that are in the books and the films now. So that's a nice little wink that maybe the original team will be in a future film. And I also like the one where you see Aisha, and she's pointing to a kind of cocoon thing, and then said there's someone in there, and she says, oh, we'll call him Adam. And that's a hint at Adam Warlock, who's a big character from the Marvel Universe, who's obviously going to come into it soon. So those two work for me. The other 3 were utterly throwaway and pointless.
Oh, yeah, with the group becoming a teenager.
That was terrible. It reminded me of like Harry Enfield. Like, oh, it's so unfair. You know, having a long fringe and a baseball cap.
Except you go, oh, I'm Groot.
Yeah, I don't want that now. I'm too in love with little baby Groot.
Yeah.
I don't want teenage Groot.
I never want him to grow up.
No. Squeezing spots on the next one and listening to My Chemical Romance and stuff. I don't
Goth
want
Groot.
It. I do not want it.
Anything else we want to say about it?
I'm done, I think.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. I'm also done as well. So let's rate this. Mark, what's your score?
It's a very, very high 7, low 8, and I'm going to weigh towards the 8, knowing that visually I absolutely loved it, and it will be a film that when it does come out in Blu-ray, I'll watch it again, and I'll regret thinking it should be higher, which I've done many times on the podcast. So it's a low 8, but it's still an 8.
Not a problem. Ben?
I enjoyed it very much. There are faults, as we've discussed. I think it's bang in the middle. If you were to list all of your MCU films, I think there have been 14 now, maybe, it'd be right in the middle of them. So it's a 7 out of 10 for me.
I'm going to go a high 9.
Wow.
I loved it. Wow. I absolutely loved it. I love it when we have different opinions about films. So it makes it really, really interesting. But I'm going to stick with my guns. I entered with a great big smile on my face. I left with a great big smile on my face. I am super excited about watching this in an IMAX environment. And the soundtrack has not left my car since. So 9 out of 10 for me. And if we do a bit of a generalisation, I'd say, well, 8 out of 10?
Correct.
So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 gets a skip to the end. 8 out of 10.
It's competition time!
Ouch.
Shorter. Ouch. Shorter. There we go.
Christ, that was Gemma level volume.
It got the point across. Mm-hmm. It's now time to give away some goods, but also reveal some winners from the last episode. So if you listened to episode 69, and if you haven't, go back and listen, because there's still some great features on there. It doesn't mean you've got to enter the competition, but there's, you know, some good stuff. The very final high five. But anyway, enough plug-in for the last episode. Episode 70, competition time. We gave away on the last episode a sleepless bundle, which consisted of a shirt, a watch, some sunglasses, keyring, no pizza, unfortunately. Imagine that, giving away pizza. Jamie Foxx plays which character in that? It is Vincent. So the winner is...
I knew that.
Sorry, I should have asked you. Obviously, yeah,
of course I knew that.
It's obviously Vincent. Sam Davis on Facebook has got that right, so you'll be getting that bundle in the post. Fast 8, that film we didn't review because we just didn't have the time, we really wanted to, came out, and we gave away a quad biking experience for 4 people, thanks to our friends at Universal.
That's an amazing
That
prize.
Is pretty good. The winner is Gemma, so you can bring 3 friends with you. It better be me and Ben and Greg. We'll have a nice day out on Universal.
Let's quad.
We better not, because they'll listen to this and kick our asses. So it's going to go to Carl Dowsett, who won on Twitter. And the last one is WrestleCrate, a new company we're working with. It gave us a prize that's got photos, it's got signed autographs, T-shirt, DVDs, literally everything in there. And the question we put out there was, what rating did we give The Wrestler on the rewatch on the last episode? So, Ben?
9.
We did, which is a hell of a rating. And Adam Walsh took the time to listen and got that right. So you'll be getting that wrestling crate in the post. Guys, I've got 4 prizes this time, because it's episode 70. Ooh. First one is Dark Bunny. Have you seen their brand new Back to the Future bundle they've done?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're not giving us just one of the T-shirts. They've given us the whole bundle. It's worth about 75 quid. It's got 3 T-shirts, toys, figures, everything. How good is that?
That's pretty sweet.
One winner, and all I'm going to do is say, what is the name of Marty, his surname in Back to the Future? How easy is that?
Also the name of arguably the greatest band in history.
Busted. Oh no, that's McFly, isn't it? And the second one is, you know our good friend Harry at Richer Sounds Preston?
Oh, yeah.
He's got some £120 Cambridge Audio SE1 headphones to give away. I'm not joking. They are unbelievable. What Hi-Fi said they're the best ones out there?
Really?
Cool.
Wearing them.
I was going to say, why are you sitting wearing these pieces of shit?
Other headphones are available. But anyway, let's make this a hard one, okay? What episode did Gemma officially join on Skip to the End? I want people to, you know, to be a bit more, you know, work for it. That's a tough one. Our good friends at Warner Brothers have given us a bundle to give away. So they've given us a Blu-ray bundle of Citizen Kane, Dog Day Afternoon, Deliverance, The Searchers, The Right Stuff, and Cool Hand Luke Blu-ray set.
That's some good films.
That is.
And a big Starlight, which I'll put on Twitter, but it's like this big one. It's unbelievable.
Oh, nice.
But what rating did we give Free Fire on the last episode? That's pretty good. Now, everyone you said has got a keyring. Not everyone ever, because we've only given 50 away and we've got 100. So for the next week, we're going to give 10 more away, okay? 5 for leaving us good iTunes ratings, because they're good, so you'll see that on Twitter. But also, let's give them away. What can we do? Let's think of a question. So what? Let's make them work again. So maybe think of anything, Ben?
Why don't we get them to name something from one of our old episodes? So we've had this new feature, haven't we? Skip to the recommend.
Yeah.
And I think the first episode where we launched that was on our Get Out episode.
Yeah.
That 2-3 episodes ago. So how about something like, what did Gemma recommend on the first Skip to the Recommend?
And the 5 people that get that right will all get a keyring. And once these have gone, they've gone. You've seen the pieces of paper online out of one of 100. We're not going to reprint them, because if I start... Hang on, I've got three, and I've got number three. We're going to get shut down.
By who?
The keyring police.
Yes, the keyring police that will kill everyone. That's it. That is a hell of a lot of prizes to give away.
It's a lot.
I've got no more time to give anything else away. But we're going to announce all the winners in 2 weeks' time on episode 71.
Now time for Movie Masturbate.
Space is still not quite right. You've had how many episodes now?
Well, a few.
You've been here for 20 episodes.
Really? You're shitting me.
You're starting on 51.
Oh my god.
Fair play.
Holy moly.
Oh, I feel like I've aged. I would say like a fine wine, but I'd be lying.
More like a piece of cheese.
Yeah, or an old Lambrini bottle.
Anyway, on to masturbating.
Masturbating. So on the last episode, we picked Daniel Day-Lewis out of the pot. So what we're going to be doing is talking about our favourite performance of Daniel Day-Lewis that he's done in his illustrious career. And why we love it so much, of course, because that's why we're here. So, Ben, I'm going to throw this one to you, and I want to hear your choice.
Whoopsie daisy! It has to be Bill the Butcher Cutting from Gangs of New York. In a career of masterful performances, this one stands head and shoulders above the rest for me. It's a performance that's both threatening and hilarious. He manages to ride that very thin line, wafer thin line, between being one of the most dominating characters, villainous characters you've ever seen on screen, but a genuinely laugh out loud funny character as well, because he's so brassy and so ballsy. He always seems on the verge of insanity, like he's about to flip and do something fucked up. And he does on many occasions throughout the film. He's throwing knives, he's wielding his big cleaver and all that kind of stuff. It's an amazing character that he was very lucky to play. The interesting thing is, the character is powerful, but the actor is powerful. Daniel Day-Lewis is always so commanding. As a character, Bill the Butcher Cutting commands every room he's in. But as an actor, Daniel Day-Lewis commands every room he's in. He acts everyone off the screen, always. And when you think about the fact that in this film, he's up against Leonardo DiCaprio, one of the best, my favourite actor of all time. He's up against John C. Reilly, one of the best character actors in the game. Jim Broadbent, another fabulous actor. And he blows them all away. And he's like a black hole. All the energy just is sucked into him and him alone, because he's just this force of nature. And by God, I love this film. And by God, I love that character.
I've got it too.
Yay! Have I left you anything to say?
My notes here are, please guys, give me another example of when Leonardo DiCaprio has been outshone and blown off every scene he's in.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any apart from this. So when he just went into there saying about the other actors, like, please shut up, that's the only thing I've got. That's my only thing, dude. I've never been so scared of a character in a non-horror film in my life. The fact of how harrowing he is and how strong he is and how stacked he is in that film, he is just terrifying from every scene he's on, and he's a general threat. He's not got magical powers. He's just a fucking nutter with a big knife and, you said, weapons, and he's just... He owns everything. And I said this... I forgot what I was saying to you the other day when they said, oh, who are you masturbating over? And I was like, oh, it's going to be Daniel Day-Lewis. You don't ever see much about his life away from film. You never hear about who he's dating or who he's got kids with, or if he's out on the piss or he's doing drugs and stuff, because he's that professional in everything he does. When you see him at an awards ceremony, no one else stands with him as their arms around him, because it's just like, there's Daniel Day-Lewis. I saw an interview with Emma Stone recently, and in the background you see him walk past, and she stops in mid-interview and goes, is that Daniel Day-Lewis? And they're like, yeah. She's like, just give me a sec. And you can see her struggling to breathe.
Yeah.
And that's someone who's in the game, who's in Hollywood, who's one of the best actresses, who's won awards, who's an Oscar winner. She is terrified of him because he leaves that impression with you.
Yeah.
And in this film, because he turns up on set and he's the method actor that we all hear about, I'm terrified of him, of everything he ever does. And Ben, you just said then he's outshone every actor in that film. He pisses all over Leonardo DiCaprio in this film. Mm-hmm. It's not even a slight, like, oh, he's a little bit better. We saw Tom Hardy go up against him in The Revenant. Leonardo DiCaprio just shows how much Tom has to do to even get worthy of cleaning his shoes. This is the role reversal in this. He is unbelievable. And to make Leonardo DiCaprio look pretty average deserves an Oscar.
Yeah, it does. It's an absolutely fantastic performance. And one of the things you've mentioned there is how you don't know a lot about his life. He is an enigma. Sometimes he will just take a decade off from making films. There was a point, I think it was about 15, 20 years ago, he decided to just stop making films for a bit and went and became a cobbler. just to reiterate, I don't mean he starred in the film The Cobbler with Adam Sandler. I mean he actually went and just became a cobbler because it was something to do apart from making films to centre himself, and then he came out when he was ready. He's not one of these guys who has to go and audition for films, you know, every month. No, people call him, and when he's ready, he comes in.
What if the Adam Sandler film The Cobbler is a biography about Daniel Day-Lewis?
It could have been a stealth biography, yeah.
Just didn't market it as that.
Maybe we need to watch it and find out.
Are you going to ruin it and be this? Well,
I've not gone for what you guys have gone for. I've gone for something a little bit different. It's actually, I suppose, the polar opposite of what Bill the Butcher is. So my choice is Christy Brown from My Left Foot.
Nice.
Rightfully won the Oscar the year that that was done. And he is the original Method Man. You got Method Man in Wu-Tang Clan, but this is the Method Man. He pretty much spends the entire film in a wheelchair as a chap who has cerebral palsy, and the only appendage that works properly is his left foot. Clues in the title. But he fully immerses himself in this role as he's completely unrecognisable. His speech is slurred. He has involuntary spasms throughout the whole film because of the condition that Christy Brown endured. But my God, you're right. Everything gravitates to him whenever you see him on the screen. Everybody is just merely a play-by actor. They're just there to support him. He is your main focus whenever you watch it. There's a scene in My Left Foot where he's already declared his love for this doctor that he's working with when he goes to the cerebral palsy school. And she's announced that she's going to be marrying a chap that she loves. And this breakdown that he experiences at this table, I've never seen anything like it. It is just... any actor out there that wants to know how to act properly, just leave your books at home, watch this film, because this film will tell you exactly how to do it. He is just jaw-dropping. Not just in that scene, but in the whole film.
He's left you speechless just talking about it, yeah.
He really did, even during in between takes and away from the film, he stayed within the wheelchair. He stayed within character.
That's crazy. Like just having his super noodles with his left foot.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
And there's a beginning scene where he plays a record and he's drawing, and that was all Daniel Day-Lewis. He did the whole entire thing. No stand-ins required. It's phenomenal.
He's I think he might be an alien because he's so good at everything he does. He's so gifted that he hasn't done an orbit. He hasn't had a bad, shitty film. He's not sold out and just gone to Netflix and done a six deal and releasing any old shit, which easily someone else could do.
Yeah. He makes one film every few years and he always makes sure it's a good one.
And he wins an Oscar and just goes back home.
Yeah. I think, is he the only guy to have won three Best Actor Oscars?
Yes, that would have been My Left Foot, Gangs of New York and Lincoln.
Yeah.
And he'll probably get another three.
Of course he will, because he's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Should we go to social media?
Yes.
I just don't know what else to say. It's just overwhelming.
He is.
Brody's Kitchen, and this is one I thought we might say. There Will Be Blood.
Mm. Yeah, Daniel Plainview, amazing.
Absolute masterpiece. Of a film as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was knocking on the door.
Sandwiches at Killing Joke told us that everyone will probably say There Will Be Blood or Gangs of New York, so I'm going to go a little deep and say In the Name of the Father.
Oh, yeah. That's such a good film.
I've never seen it.
So good.
Suvi Benderson has said In the Age of Innocence.
I haven't seen that one.
Nope.
No.
It says it's a highly underrated Scorsese film, beautifully shot and a very good adaptation from the novel.
Holy shit, so there's a Daniel Day-Lewis Scorsese film I haven't seen.
Oh, I wonder what you're doing tonight.
Holy shit.
And Leo's in it. No, he's not. Chris Stagg has said, best ever actor in my opinion, and it's got to be Gangs of New York. Mm-hmm. See, Gemma?
I know, I'll rewatch it at some point.
Brilliant. Okay then, so Tam Liz Ann O'Driscoll has said, has to be to the very first Oscar-winning performance of My Left Foot. And finally, Bitchin' Boutique has a very tough one, but it's got to be Lincoln.
Great performance.
Unbelievable.
I don't think there's a wrong answer in this, is there?
No.
Well, I've got hand lotion ready. I'm going to have a little squirt, rub up a little bit, and it's ready to masturbate again.
That's far too specific. So it's my turn to pick. Give me a drum roll, please.
Oh, they sound good on these mics. These Shure mics. 55SH from Richer Sounds. Thank you very much.
That's Richer Sounds.
And we're going to be masturbating over Denzel Washington.
Oh!
I can't believe the news today. Oh, I can't believe.
Our rewatch this time round is the 1995 film Kids, directed by Larry Clark and written by Harmony Korine. It stars Chloe Sevigny, Rosario Dawson, Leo Fitzpatrick and Justin Pierce. And it was a very controversial film when it came out because it's about the day in the life of a group of hedonistic teenagers in New York City who engage in drink, drugs, violence and unprotected sex, all at the height of the AIDS crisis in New York. Unsurprisingly, this was controversial because these kids depicted are, what, sort of mid-teens? We're talking about 15, 16-year-olds. The question I really want to throw out to you, we're going to discuss this film in the whole, but the main question I want to put out to you, or I want us to think about is, does this film really have any artistic merit? Or was it built, was it designed to shock? That's kind of what I want to know from you as we go through it. So first of all, let's start with Gemma. Have you seen this film before?
I have. I saw it when I was probably 14 years old. Mm-hmm. So I saw it when I was a very young age and I shouldn't have been watching
it.
But I watched it because at that time I enjoyed controversial films. So I think when I was at that age, I would watch Natural Born Killers. I would watch Kids. I wanted things to shock me. So I've not seen it since then. So I'm years old now. So I'm not 14. This is a horror movie for parents.
Big time.
It is terrifying to watch. You don't want to see what happens because you almost know what is going to be the conclusion of it. But I think it's probably one of the most realistic and honest depictions of kids at that time in New York who don't give a monkey's about the consequences of their actions.
See, I think you're probably right. I think it probably is, but that's horrible. It's awful. If it is realistic, if that is what kids were like at this point,
I think
God help us.
I never want to be a dad.
No. So, Mark, had you seen this before?
Only at uni, so it didn't count. I was... we've gone through it, but I don't remember it. It was 20 years ago, man. Like, you know, this film was 22 years old?
It's a...
Yeah,
something like that.
Don't remember, dude. It felt like the very first time I'd ever watched it. Mm-hmm. I won't lie to you. When I first put it on, I was 5 minutes in. The kissing scene was still going on.
Oh, it's my too God. Long.
The sound, the lips and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was literally going to text you and say, Ben, can we just somehow go back and edit the episode? Because I just don't want to watch this. This is doing my head in. Like, genuinely, how are we going to talk about a family film about guardians and then this film that's already annoying me and we're 5 minutes in? You asked the question, and I do think it wasn't just to kind of get people's backs up.
Yeah.
I genuinely think artistically this film does work, and the longer it went on, the more I had respect for it. The longer the story went and the different filming and the different actions and the way the performances of the actors, I actually give merit to the whole director and the writer and everything. I think it's bloody good.
So what do we think the message of this film is then? Because the message I took from it is that kids are twats, and I don't think that was meant to be the message.
When your kids are saying, I'm just going out for a bit now, give them condoms. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a real eye-opener, knowing that was 20 years ago, before social media and Facebook and Tinder and Twitter and all these different ways of meeting people. I don't know what the message is. I think it's just that kids are adults at that age.
Yeah.
I think a 14-year-old is living the life of a 25-year-old, and don't try and think they're not. When they're going out and they're telling you they're just going to play some skateboarding with their mates and stuff, they're shagging 3 or 4 women that night, getting coked up, doing crack, and being filthy.
Yeah. So your the message you take from it is, oh, they grow up so fast.
Yes, don't they grow up so much nowadays? I don't think I'll be laughing during this rewatch.
Oh, the message I took away from this, every action has a consequence. You might feel like you really don't give a toss about what you're doing or who you're hurting. It's all about being in the now. The message I took from it is you need to think about everything has a reason as to why it happens, but you need to think about the future ultimately and not the present. The kids that are depicted in this film live for the moment. They don't think about tomorrow. They don't think about yesterday. They just want to have a good time.
That's at anyone's expense.
Yeah, at anyone's expense. And that is terrifying.
And that's their eventual undoing. So for those of you who haven't seen the film, just to give you an idea, there are three main characters, really. You've got Casper and Telly, two young lads, and then the girl played by Chloe Sevigny, whose name I've forgotten.
Jenny.
So what happens is Jenny has had sex with Telly, and Telly has this whole thing where he'll only have sex with virgins because, you know, he just prefers it that way. And because when Jenny slept with him, she assumed that she couldn't get any kind of STD, because if he's only slept with virgins, what could he possibly have? She then goes along to a health clinic with her friend, only to keep her friend company while her friend has an AIDS test. Her friend has been sleeping around, has the test, it comes back clean. Jenny has the test after only having slept with Telly this once. She's got HIV. She's then spending the rest of the day trying to find Telly to let him know he's got HIV, in which time he's then slept with another girl and passed it on. She then passes out Jenny at this party when she finally finds Telly because she's had some drugs. When she's passed out, the other lad, Casper, rapes her. So it's this whole... when I put it into words in about a minute of speech, I realise how awfully bleak this film is. But everything is just this domino effect of disaster.
Yeah.
Of, basically, at the end of the film, all of your leads have got AIDS. This has become AIDS cast all of a sudden, I'm aware. Yeah, I didn't think we'd be talking this much about AIDS on a Guardians of the Galaxy podcast.
The next rewatch, Philadelphia. The way you've put it there is bleak. It's dark. You can't have much fun. We have a lot of fun on this podcast and be wrong and do impressions of people and stuff. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. This is a tough one to have any sort of... Even I'm struggling to have any comedy element to this. But I'll tell you what, Ben, right? I'll be honest. I said there that the first 5 minutes I didn't enjoy and I was getting wound up with his lips and his horrible... He's got a horrible mouth.
Ugly mouth.
His teeth and everything.
It looks like there's too much teeth in his mouth.
I think there are. He's a shark. I bloody love this film. And that's what I want to get to because it was an experience. It didn't open my eyes up that, oh my God, people have sex in the world. But it's real. It's raw, it's horrible, but it's someone else's experience that made them write about this. You don't just think this shit up while you're lying in bed at night. You know, this has happened. This is someone else's story that they're being told on the big screen. I don't care. You'll go back and read from the director. He'll know someone that this happened to.
Well, Harmony Korine, who wrote it, was 19 when he wrote it, and a lot of the people depicted in it are based on friends and experiences that he
Perfect.
Had.
Perfect. And that is the scariest thing. Mm. But I did enjoy it. I think it was a real eye-opener. It just shocked me. It had that value that not many films have nowadays because it's all CGI and big budget. This was just raw. It was horrible.
See, it's interesting because you didn't watch it when you were a kid, when you were the age that the characters are. You didn't see it until university. So I, like Gemma, I saw it when I was about 14. I remember it coming out and us kids at school, it being the film that everyone was talking about because we knew what it entailed, what it was about, and everyone wanted to see it. And a friend of mine managed to get a copy on VHS when it came out. And a few of us got together and watched it, and we were kind of shocked by it, but also incredibly bored by it. We thought it was shit, quite frankly. It just didn't live up to the hype. And now seeing it again years later, I kind of feel the same way. And I wonder if it's because I saw it then and it didn't live up to the hype. How do you feel about it, Gemma? Because you're in the same boat as me. You saw it young.
I think I see it with two different eyes. So when I was a kid, thinking this is probably what my teenage life is going to be. I'm going to go out, have drugs, drink, have sex, and do some sweet skateboarding tricks. Sadly, that didn't happen. But now I am a little bit older, and I think I do have a bit of a different head watching it. And it is... I don't ever remember my teenage life, being that extreme.
No. I'd hope not. And your mum's listening to this episode as well.
It never happened, Mum, I promise. But it's like the failed Generation X. You hear about Generation X with like the MTV movement of like Real World and Road Rules and music videos being so big at that point in time. But these kids are the failed experiment of that. They never showed graphic depictions of drug taking, underage sex, because Telly did that. That beginning monologue when he's walking through the streets with Casper and he's commenting about that girl being, 13?
She was 12, I think.
12 years old. And I think at the time when I did watch this as a teenager, I didn't really think much of it. Listening back to it now, watching back at it now and being the age I am, it is horrifying. That is what kids spoke of at that time. And it's probably how kids speak of, like, today.
Yeah,
you just don't know. So I did enjoy it. It made me very, very uncomfortable watching it the second time round when in comparison to back in the day.
Yeah.
But it is, I do see the artistic merit.
It's interesting you say that it's kind of a failed generation, as it were, because if they were 16 at the time, in 95, 22 years later, we're looking at people who are now, 38?
Yeah.
So these are the leaders of today. These are the people who are in positions of power. You know, if this were a documentary, and it feels like one, because it's so naturalistic, this film. The dialogue never feels scripted. It never feels staged. It feels improvised. If this was real, and it feels real, they would be the leaders of today. They would be the people making all the decisions that control our lives.
Makes a lot of sense.
I don't want any of my decisions being in the hands of Telly.
Yeah.
No,
ever.
Oh my God, no.
Ever.
And if that is what people really were like, if it was based on Harmony Korine's real experiences, people he knew and things he'd seen, they are real. They do exist in the world. They're making decisions now.
Frightening.
Yeah.
This is getting very heavy. I'm like, shit.
But what a stark contrast to stereotypical teen films like 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, Clueless. You realise how much of a Hollywood shine each of those films have. This is stripped of all of its veneer and shine. This is the visceral product of what teen films are. And there's never been a film like this that I've seen that Hollywood or even independent filmmakers have done. This is certainly a one of a kind.
Yeah.
And I don't think it could have been made today.
No, and it was interesting because Miramax bought it, so that's Harvey Weinstein's company, and they were going to release it. But at the time, Miramax were owned by Disney, and Disney were like, no. They were like, we know you're an independent little shingle on your own, but no, Disney can't have anything to do with this. So Harvey and Bob Weinstein set up a separate production company or distribution company just to release this one film. They bought the rights off from Disney and they made a shitload of money off it, but it was kind of toxic in the industry. No one wanted to touch it. No one wanted to put it out because the material is so dark. And it would be dark if it was about adults.
Yeah.
It's about teenagers.
Yeah. Mm. And kids.
Yeah. And you can't make a Disney ride out of this either. Well, you could, but that's a completely different amusement park.
Opening scene in Orlando.
Yeah, Telly, the ride.
Oh, so many people have had that ride already, which is the bad point about that film. But I think the fact is that when Ben said there, it didn't seem like a film, it seemed like a documentary. I think that's why I enjoyed it so much, because I just watched it as if I was watching camera footage of someone's life.
Yeah.
And I kind of missed that. And the closest thing I've ever seen to this is a film called Elephant.
Yeah.
And that's raw and that's gritty and that's about a school shooting and stuff. So.
And wasn't that directed by Gus Van Sant?
I would
die. Oh, no way.
I think it was. I might be wrong, but I think it was. And he was one of the executive producers on Kids.
Ah, so that all makes sense. Yeah. So that's the closest you get. And you don't get anything that feels like this. The closest now is probably...
I'd say Kidulthood, maybe.
We need to talk about Kevin. That's quite gritty and horrible, and it feels like you're watching it. But there's nothing like this film, man. It's hot. It's nasty. Mm.
Even down to the soundtrack it's used. It's real scuzzy, grunge kind of music.
Yeah, it's...
Whether it just doesn't feel clean, and you could contrast that with The Epidemic.
But I did enjoy it, and I probably surprised you with that,
because
you probably thought I should be offending, but it was a real experience, and that's what the Rewatches is all about.
What about the actors then? So we had Chloe Sevigny and we had Rosario Dawson, both of whom were making their film debuts. What do you think about them?
It was scary, because
Rosie
O'Donnell?
Rosario is one of my iconic actors for Clerks 2, and I know we joke, but I always see her as in that, and Sin City.
Yeah.
But she looks exactly the same in this. I know she's a bit younger, but it's just a mini-me. Yeah. And as soon as I saw her face, I was like, no, like, I can't see this. You're talking about how you've had anal sex, and you've done this, and you've done that, and you've been really filthy, and had all these. And I was like, oh, this seems wrong, because I just associate with you being an adult.
Yeah.
So it was a bit uncomfortable. I didn't like it.
But she looked like a star from the beginning. Mm. You could see the quality there. You knew she was going on to bigger and better things. And as for Chloe Sevigny, well, the best actress in that whole film. You just feel that sadness when she discovers she has HIV. She's trying to get in touch with her little brother and she can't get hold of him. She just breaks down onto Rosario Dawson's character, Ruby. That search, that hopeless search of trying to find Telly, knowing that she was just going to be another statistic, not just for the HIV virus, but just for a bedpost notch for him. It's awful, but she played it so beautifully.
Yeah. I love that scene where she's in the taxi and the taxi driver's trying to cheer her up, that old fella, and she's trying to go along with it, but you can see she's just heartbroken because all she's thinking is, I've just been diagnosed with HIV.
Yeah.
Harsh.
It is harsh.
Absolutely brutal. I still love it. I'm going to keep fighting all the way through it. I still really enjoyed it, but just bleak.
What about the party scene towards the end? So this is where a culmination of things start becoming... like meeting ahead, where we see Telly with that new young virgin that he's with, and they're all sort of smoking weed, drinking, and just messing up this house. Because I found that to be one of the most interesting scenes in the whole film, because it's these kids at their most primal, almost. They're not going against the grain of what society expects from them. They're going back to like caveman roots. They're just doing shit and they don't care about what they're doing. I just found that fascinating, that whole scene.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is you see the next generation. So we've got the characters we know who are all 15, 16, and then there's an even younger set of kids who are maybe 9, 10, 11, and they're sat there in their gold chains and they're smoking weed and they're, you know, talking about girls and stuff. And you're like, oh shit, these are just the next ones. They're coming up now.
So it's just a chain reaction, like dominoes, like what Ben said earlier.
I think that was my most hardest scene to watch, because Telly's trying to get a room for himself at the parents', is like, come on, let me have her, and takes this girl in there. You know she's a virgin, you know at this point he's definitely got AIDS. And you're just hoping that someone bursts in at the right time so she doesn't have sex. She's losing her virginity. She's saying, oh, he's talking around her and kind of I mean, it's just kind of trying to get into her head to say it's a good thing. Yeah. And she's like, go soft. And he's an absolute animal. He's pretty much pounding away at her. And she's like, ah, this is painful. And she's just being watched over. And basically, you just know that that's the end for her.
Yeah.
By Jenny, of all people.
And she's watching. And you see that shot of her in the background, just watching over. She can't even stop and say, look, stop having sex. You know, it's too late.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're just devastation. It's just the ultimate, like... My heart just dropped, and I was like, I still enjoy it. But I was at that point, I was just like, this is sad, just bleak.
Mm-hmm. It is. And then the film ends with kind of, it's almost the thesis statement for the whole film. There's a voiceover from Telly, and I forget the exact words, but he says something along the lines of, you know, I'm only out there to get laid. If I couldn't get laid, then I wouldn't have anything else.
Yeah.
And that shows that's all he lives for. That's all he does. And look how that ended up.
And the thing he loved is ultimately his death sentence.
Yeah.
Shame. I have to try and get something to make it all worthwhile.
Oh, Christ.
I want to score it. I'm about to slip my wrist.
Me too. Let's score it. Let's move on. Mark, you seem to enjoy it most, so I want to hear what you gave it.
This is definitely an 8, which is high.
Wow.
But you gave me a film that I was despising when it started. I thought, I can't be doing this. His mouth, the kissing, his teeth. It was too much, and that's in 5 minutes. But by the end of it, I was blown away. It was an experience, and it made me feel things that not many films do anymore. And you couldn't even think of anything, Gemma, since then that's made you feel this way.
Exactly.
So give it credit where it's due. 8 out of 10.
Fair play, Gemma.
And with Mark, it's an 8 out of 10. It's a film I don't think I'm going to be watching for a very long time, but it has that impression already where I was so affected watching it. You have to see this, even if it's just for the very first time or for a rewatch, just like we've done today. Go and watch it again. A strong 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm not going to score it quite so highly. It's a 6 for me. It's a film that I don't love, but I kind of admire. And I think it's a film that teenagers who think they're cool and don't think that they have any consequences should be forced to watch. I think this should be part of the school curriculum, frankly.
A Borstal class or something.
Yeah, kids should be forced, Clockwork Orange style, to watch this and learn what not to do. So I think it's kind of important and meaningful, but I just don't find it that entertaining. So it's a 6 for me. So I would say it's fair to give it 7 out of 10 overall.
I think so.
Very happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. This has been a hell of an experience and very sensible for us. It's my turn for the next rewatch, and I've realised that we're now 70 episodes in, and we've never really discussed this director, and he's going to be the talk of the town again in the next few weeks, because we have the return of Twin Peaks. So everyone is going to be talking about the master, David Lynch. So I'm going to be picking one of his movies for us all to experience, and hopefully talk about again in 2 weeks. So on the next episode, it will be Blue Velvet.
Amazing. Yes!
It's time for the brand new game show, Whose Tagline Is It Anyway? I'm just going to say it now, it ain't going to be as good as High Five. We will put our hands up, but, you know, it's still a good game show and it's original. We're not going to copy other podcasts and, you know, come up with other ones, but this is our thing.
Yeah, it's original. Again, the name of the quiz was what?
Whose Tagline Is It Anyway?
Yeah, that's original.
That's what it is. Yeah. So it's a homage maybe to something else, but I couldn't think of what it would be copying in any way at all. Let's get down straight to it. So it's a brand new fresh game show and it's quite simple. I'm going to give you both 5 taglines from films. Really quite obvious. Look around the room, you know, Ben's posters, there's big taglines. I hope I haven't picked any of those now, but big taglines that are very iconic. Because I've not been harsh and picked stuff like Shark Attack 2. I've been good and picked big iconic ones which you should remember. But it's not always that easy on the spot. We know this, you know, it's difficult. What we'll do is we'll score 1 point each. You don't get a chance to listen again or to have it repeated. It's once and once only. So the maximum points you're going to earn today is 5 each. What we're going to do, if we have a tiebreaker, you get 1 more each to make it a bit more tense. Okay. And then if you still are equal, it's fastest finger first. So, do you pretty much understand the... it's quite simple, really.
It is, yeah. I almost want to do... You know when we did High Five, we're like, high five! We can't really do it with this one.
Tagline!
Tagline is it anyway!
There's nothing that we can do. Let's just forget about High Five now.
Let's
it's gone.
It.
This
yeah,
is all about it. Now the greatest game show in the history of podcasting, Whose Tagline Is It Anyway? To make it really fair, Ben can go first.
Okay.
Are you ready, Ben?
Yes.
For your first tagline. His story will touch you. Even though he can't.
What?
Right. So I'm thinking it's one of these kind of uplifting family movies, but about someone who hasn't got any arms.
Stumpy Stumperton the film.
Oh, God. His what will touch you?
So I said I wouldn't repeat, but I'll let you. His story will touch you, even though he can't. Any guesses?
Oh, God, I don't know. Wally.
Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, shit, yeah. That makes sense.
Gemma, are you ready for your first one?
Let's go.
What one doesn't have, the other one is missing.
I was going to say Adam Sandler's career, but that's not really an answer, is it? Twins?
Ooh, Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
Ben, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Just because they serve you, it doesn't mean they like you.
Clerks.
Yes! Yes!
Oh, God.
Good start. Yeah, I know I'm much of a fan. Are you still watching any more of his films?
Or? I haven't watched any more yet, but I will.
Are you ready, Gemma?
Okay.
The true story of a real fake.
Oh, God. It seems so obvious. Is it Catch Me If You Can?
It is.
Oh, wow. My God. Wow.
Good work.
That's
work.
Amazing. Fair play. So at the moment, it's one all after two questions. Ben, your third one. The longer you wait, the harder it gets.
Oh, Christ. Boogie Nights.
Ooh. Oh. The 40-year-old virgin.
Oh. Come on.
Ready, Gemma?
Let's go.
This is your third one.
Okay.
See it with a bud.
Is it Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
Dazed and Confused.
Oh.
I would have murdered him if he had two Kevin Smith
Can you
films.
Imagine?
Ben, are you ready?
Yeah.
You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll hurl.
Oh, flip. I know it, but I can't remember what it is. It's something like, but it may or may not be, Wayne's World.
Do you want to go with that, or...?
Yeah.
He's correct!
Hey!
It's hard on the spot, isn't it?
Mm.
That's what she said. Gemma, you ready for your fourth one?
I'm ready.
One man struggle to take it easy.
My ex-boyfriend?
Oh.
Is that your final answer?
No. One man struggle.
I hope he's listening. What's his name?
He ain't listening. Is it The Big Lebowski?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
So yeah, that's what I would have gone for.
Yeah.
I thought it was that.
So just to confirm, Ben is winning now 2-1. And this is the last one. Ben.
Mm.
Everyone wants to be found.
Everyone wants to be found.
Correct.
So it's about someone who is lost, presumably.
I'm going to avoid eye contact.
Oh, God. Home Alone 2.
Lost in Translation.
Oh.
Gemma, no pressure, but you have to get this right.
I know, right?
Are you ready?
Let's go.
Earth. It was fun while it lasted.
Is it Mars Attacks?
Ben is the winner. It was Armageddon.
And again, that's what I would have said.
Yeah.
Mars Attacks. Yeah, how weird.
Oh,
so
blast.
It's the final score, 2-1 to Ben.
Well done, Ben.
We've not exactly covered ourselves in glory. Can we have the other ones for
of
a bit
course.
Of fun?
Yeah.
Let's work as a team on these, Gemma.
Okay,
you ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Does for rock and roll what The Sound of Music did for the Hills?
I'm guessing Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Correct.
Hey.
High five each other. This is good. And the very last one. An epic of epic epicness.
So it's going to be some sort of spoof,
presumably.
You're going to kick yourself at this.
An epic of epic epicness.
It probably is Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, isn't it?
Go on.
Scott Pilgrim.
Oh!
Oh, dear.
Ben's won this. I think he can go home with some pride. It's been a tough one, but I've been quite nice with the titles. Do you agree?
Yeah,
I've not gone too harsh.
Yep, you have.
Do you want to be Games Master as the
champ? Yeah, I'll give it a go.
So we'll come back. Ben's going to be the Games Master, and this has been the very first round of Whose Tagline Is It Anyway? So we're almost at the end, and as always, we've got some unbelievable, I love using that word, unbelievable listener questions.
Say it like that all the time.
Always.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Kicking things off, we have Basement Condition, who has said, After this Star Wars Episode 9, do you think they'll continue with a new saga, or how do you believe the franchise will be kept on going?
Oh, they will run it into the ground.
It's Disney, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Disney, and it's making a hell of a lot of money, so they will just keep churning out films until the end of time.
Yeah, there is a teat that needs to be milked.
Do you think there'll be like a new prophecy and the Skywalker one will close and something else will start, so we get episode 10, 11, 12, 13, just keep doing...
They'll keep coming up with shit. and I will keep paying to see it, because I love it.
Five or six times in 3D at the most expensive screen we can find. Lee Johnson has said, after your amazing rewatch of The Wrestler, what's your favourite film each that features a wrestler? Gemma, you're not allowed to pick Suburban Commando. While you think, I'm going to go with They Live with Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, great film.
Because
so good.
He is not just a cameo as a wrestler. He's leading it and killing it and chewing every scene.
Mm-hmm. And he has some great one-liners.
Unbelievable.
I kind of think I'd have to say the first Guardians film, because Batista's in it. Yep. It's a fantastic film.
Not the film of Kane?
The one where he's wanking.
What?
Yeah, I didn't love that one so much.
Honestly.
He plays a bad guy called like Jacob Goodnight or some shit, and he's spying on women through a spiral and having a little tug.
Oh,
yeah, tugboat.
Really? Oh, what? They Live, just because Rowdy Roddy Piper is just such a badass.
At Dan Burden 1138, if you were stuck in a life or death situation and there was no choice, which celebrity would you eat and why? All I can think of is Hannibal. I wouldn't eat him.
You want a big fella, don't you? Someone with a bit of meat on him.
Yeah. Hurley from Lost. Yeah. You know, you get some prime cuts out of him.
Josh Gad.
That'd be good.
I bet you go nice with a bit of pepper sauce.
Rose Byrne.
Why?
There's nothing on her.
I've always fancied her. I've always wanted to eat her.
Oh, so you've taken this the wrong way, haven't you?
Oh, my God. Family show.
Says you, who's been saying horrible stuff throughout this whole episode.
Shocking.
I'm a bastard, aren't I?
Hurley from Lost, then we'll all agree on that one. Is that fair?
I don't know. It'd be a bit sort of stringy. You want someone who's lean.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
You want a good cut.
Batista.
Oh, yes.
That's going to be tough. That's too tough.
It might have like some, if you cut Hurley, you might have like marbling in the steak as well. So it might be a bit chewy.
So random. Craig Thurlow has said, who would you cast in a live-action Thundercats movie? Which is always talked about, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know who I would cast, but I know who Hollywood would cast. As Lino, the main dude, they would cast The Rock.
100%.
Because he's got the build, they just pop an orange wig on him. Done.
Chitara the Blonger would have to be Jennifer Lawrence, because she's in everything as well. Mm-hmm. Panfro, who do you reckon? Oh, he's a big fella. He could be probably Vin Diesel.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He can actually earn his money for once.
And let's do Snarf as well, that little fella with the beard.
Alan Tudyk.
I'd cast Rocket Raccoon as Snarf.
Warwick Davis. That would be good.
See, I thought I was being respectful with Alan Tudyk, but...
Yeah, there's no respect.
But no, let's put Warwick Davis in it.
He also wants to know, real simple one, what's your favourite ever John Hughes film?
Oh, Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Yeah, mine too. Straight away.
Uncle Buck, just to be different. Owen Bruce Lee has said, have you got any favourite short movies? That's funny, I was just talking about Warwick Davis. But short movies. I'll be honest, I don't know.
There's one that if you've not seen it, Mark, you would like. You know Chris Morris from Brass Eye, Day to Day, Jam, etc. He did a short movie called My Wrongs, number 8245 to 8249 and 117. And it's a really weird thing starring Paddy Considine, where he has this pet dog who starts talking to him, and the dog is voiced by Chris Morris. And it's like an extended Jam sketch. I think it's 12 minutes long.
I'm watching that now.
I've not seen that since uni days. Yeah. That's a great short film.
Alad Howells, is there any TV, because it seems to be the current thing, that you would actually like revived? I would say Hannibal.
Yeah.
Because even though Series 3 was very trippy and all over the shop, he had Season 4 ready to go. The actors were on board, Mads Mikkelsen had read about it, we're getting closer to the Silence of the Lambs. We've already said now that we kind of vision now as Mads Mikkelsen as being Hannibal Lecter, even over the one and only Sir Anthony Hopkins, so... Let's have that.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, if Netflix is bringing back Gilmore Girls, for the love of Christ,
God, shoot me.
Bring back Hannibal. For me, it would be Lost. Lost is one of my favourite shows of all time. It's not just because we've been talking about Hurley. I'd love to see Lost brought back, as long as they then retconned the final season, so that the final season was just a dream or something, it didn't happen, and they have another go at it. Because that's a great show, and they shit the bed with the final season.
We've got to go back again. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'd love to see the return of Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, big time.
I know two seasons was enough and it didn't do an overkill, but I'd love to see Brett and Jermaine come back again.
I was going to say League of Gentlemen as well, but it's coming back.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, it's official.
Yes.
Hopefully it'll only just be a couple. They don't want to like do too much where it gets like X-Files where no one really wants it anymore.
And I hope they go back to the format from the first two series.
Yeah.
The third series, they changed the format and it didn't work.
It was shit. All the characters coming together and each other's...
Was it like one storyline and then at the end of the, at the end of each episode?
Right, because the first two series were like sketches.
Yeah.
But then the third one, they'd focus on one character.
That's right, yeah.
It was shit.
God, I would love to go back to Royston Vasey.
Me and my friend Frank, we once drove through Royston Vasey because it's this village. I think it's in like it's near. I think it's sort of near Glossop, sort of Derbyshire, Manchester. I think it's called Hatfield. And we drove through it once just so we could say we'd been to Royston Vasey.
That's amazing.
It's the real name of Roy Chubby Brown.
Fallen Angel 2106 has said, "What is the best portrayal of a real life person or the worst?" I'm going to go with Lincoln.
Do you know, I was thinking the same thing. Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln.
Let's give him a bit more love on this episode. That was... Not that I ever got to see Lincoln in the flesh and meet him, but it's just
you
unbelievable.
Believe it, yeah. Mm. I think the worst, off the top of my head, was... Did you ever see the Steve Jobs film starring Ashton Kutcher?
Yes.
Did anyone?
I did, sadly. And he got the part purely because he looks like him. If you look at pictures of Jobs from the 70s and Kutcher with his long hair and beard, they are, you know, twins, but he's a shit actor, isn't he?
I didn't like Will Smith as, I was about to say Ali G, but no,
Muhammad Ali.
Oh, please. Hollywood, if you're listening, please. Cast Will Smith in an Ali G biography.
Amazing.
It was just not great. And I just think to do an iconic role like that, it's too out of his reach.
I really liked Michael Sheen as David Frost in Frost Nixon.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, good show. Films.
He got his mannerisms spot on. As for the worst, Ben's got it. Kutcher. Kutcher.
Do you ever used to remember the Adam and Joe show?
Yes.
That was one of my favourite shows, and they always used to intentionally mispronounce his name. They'd call him like Ashton Kutcher.
That's my excuse for this whole thing I do on the podcast.
This whole thing was satire. 70 episodes.
Darren Wadsworth has said, if you guys inherited your own cinema, how would you make it? Like, you know, the Prince Charles do classics and all that.
Ooh. So what would it be like?
Yeah, what would you have?
There's an independent cinema in Sheffield called The Showroom, which I love. It's in this beautiful old Art Deco building, and it's a really, really hipster place. You see people in their scarves drinking their chai lattes in there. But they play a lot of independent movies that won't get shown at the Blockbuster theatres. They play documentaries that you wouldn't see elsewhere, but they also have older films, and they have festivals where they show, you know, collections of films and so on, and it is cool as hell. It's not too dissimilar to the Phoenix in Leicester, but it's a bit grander. I'd want somewhere like that.
I would make mine purely an 80s cinema. So when you walk in, everything's the 80s. So it's the old seats with the cigarette holders on the back and all that. You'd have the neon lights on the way in. They would stop halfway through a film and someone would come down and sell popcorn. And it'd just be like, and everyone would go, oh my God, this is just like when I was a kid. How cool would that be? And it only shows 80s films.
Yeah.
I'd like to do themed like evenings where you can kind of deck the cinema out almost like the notion of what the picture is. So like Spirited Away, for example, you do a showing of Spirited Away, so you'd have like all these like Chinese sort of like food stalls in the opening bit at the beginning. Everyone would be in like all these kind of kimono robes and you'd have like these monsters walking up and down the aisles. I'd really want to make it kind of a little bit of a secret cinema-esque kind of experience.
Kind of smaller, minor. Yeah. That's very cool.
And really go for the whole, you know, manga kind of Studio Ghibli approach. I think that would completely elevate it.
That would be super. Superb. Have either of you ever done the thing of hiring out one of these smaller independent cinemas to show a film?
I would love to.
No, and I want to.
Yeah.
And I think it would be good.
We did it a few years back when I was living in Birmingham. There's a theatre there that we've been to, The Electric. We saw The Room there a couple of years ago. And they let you do that. They hire out. And my friend Nick, his favourite film of all time is Flash Gordon.
Aww.
So we hired out the cinema and watched Flash Gordon there. It's really cool doing that.
That is awesome. Mm. Did you know that, you know, our listener, Warren, him and Ruth, his wife, got married in that cinema?
Yes, I remember.
How cool is that?
It's a lovely venue. I went there a few weeks ago and it's gorgeous.
Unbelievable place. Steve-ELIFM has said, what is your favourite dragon movie?
Way of the Dragon.
Enter the Dragon.
Pete's Dragon.
Brilliant. Is that it? Is that our answers? Dave Jones, real quick one. Do you want to actually finally see The Goonies 2?
No.
I don't.
No, thank you.
Corey Feldman's too busy anyway with his music career to do that now.
Go for it.
Daniel Christie has said, what's your favourite old Disney film? Classic old, before the Pixar days.
We're talking animated.
Yeah.
I'm not, as you know, I'm not really a big Disney fan, but I guess I would probably say Aladdin.
Yep. Jungle Book.
It's so much thought.
Only because I absolutely love Disney. I'll say Bambi because it was my very first cinema experience and it still cuts me up deep inside when his mum kind of, you know...
Ryan Abbott has said, after your wrestler rewatch, whose wrestling life would you like to see made into a film?
I've got one word for you.
Woo!
It's got to be Ric Flair because that man has lived a life.
Yeah. I want to be different just to drag this out, so I'm going to say Mick Foley.
Yeah, that'd
his
be great.
Life would be great. Mm-hmm. Or who's the guy that shot his wife and kids?
Chris Benoit.
And that's been in the works for a while. There's a script going around Hollywood, has been for 2 or 3 years, based off a couple of biographies that were written. At one point, Liev Schreiber was attached to play Benoit, which would be great.
Blimey, yes, yeah. I see that.
God, that would be quite dark.
Mm. Oh, yeah, just a bit.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the Ninth Wonder of the World, China's story, because I think she had a real high but then complete descent into loners.
Do you think they keep the bits in about her making home porn with X-Pac?
Forgot about that one.
Yeah, she didn't.
Neither did he.
Did you see that last week it's been announced that there's a Vince McMahon film being made?
Oh God.
Has he cast himself?
Probably. But the annoying thing is, it's, you know, it's got a good production company behind it and so on, but WWE are involved.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's a gift and a curse, because on one hand, it could only ever be made if they were involved. He wouldn't give his likeness rights and so on.
Yeah.
But with him involved, it means it's just going to completely whitewash all the steroids and mm-hmm. the sexual abuse scandals and all that kind of stuff.
Very final question from Ian Young. After Mark produced Mark and Me, Ben and Gemma, what would your subject be for your solo podcast?
I would absolutely love to do a TV podcast. The problem is TV, unlike movies, TV is ephemeral. It comes and goes so quickly. So an episode comes out today, 7 days later, there's another one. So you need to produce your podcast, get it edited and get it out so quickly, or else people have stopped caring about that particular episode. So it's just, it's too difficult to do a TV one, I think. But if I did do it, it would be called Flip to the End.
Nice. You know,
flipping the channels and so on.
And what would your, at this moment in time, what would be your chosen TV series that you would...
Oh, it'd be Better Call Saul at the minute. I would Fargo as well. Fargo season 3 is back, so...
Yeah.
They're the biggies.
I would like to do a kind of a film podcast where you look from the very end to the very start, almost like Memento, and I would imaginatively title it Gemento.
Gemento.
And see if the clues at the end of the film were there all along, from right at the end to the very beginning, to see how it would all link. Almost like there's a... Was it that French film that you were talking about? You know, the one with the rape.
Irreversible.
Thank you. Almost like that. So see if there's any films that could maybe
tailored
to that.
What we should do at some point is we break up, we go off and you do this TV and you do this rape podcast.
Of course.
Brilliant.
And we come together and reform and then do like the best of tour where we go off and just redo the episodes again and cash in. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like the best of greatest hits.
I look forward to our inevitable cash in tour.
Yeah.
That's when we make the real buns.
Keep your questions coming. The best way to get in contact with us is go on skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there we have our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram, and also the old school email. Send your questions in and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
That brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I've really enjoyed today. How about you guys?
I don't want it to end, and it's a bank holiday, so I think we should just do another podcast tonight.
Yeah, shall we?
Yeah.
It's been different, this one, because we started out full of fury, talking about people we hated and that annoyed us. And then we got silly and loose and funny, and then it got really dark.
serious.
It got real, real dark and serious. But it's been good. There's been laughter, there's been tears. But it ain't over yet. So our new regular feature of the show is Skip to the Recommend. It's where we come and tell you about something that we're enjoying in the pop culture landscape right now in the hopes that you could enjoy it too. It can be a film that you've enjoyed, it can be a TV show, it can be a book, it can be a website, it can be an amusing fridge magnet you've seen. Whatever you want. Gemma, what's your pick this week?
I've gone for a documentary on Netflix.
Ooh.
I know, I'm so arty. It's called Casting JonBenet.
Oh, about JonBenet Ramsey?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so it's by an Australian documentarian called Kitty Green, and it centres on the unsolved murder case of the 6-year-old beauty queen who was murdered on Christmas Day in Boulder, Colorado. No one knows who did it.
Her parents did it.
Yeah, they did. This documentary is completely different from other documentaries that you've seen, so it's not shot or styled in the way how you know documentaries to be. So what Kitty Green had done is she got some local actors from Boulder and asked them to audition for various different roles, like the mother, the father, the brother, JonBenet herself, and asked them about their experiences to try and connect with the character that they were auditioning. These participants were quite open, so they really draw on some experiences to try and get themselves into the character. And one chap even tells about he woke up to find his girlfriend dead.
Oh dear.
In bed. It doesn't say exactly what happened. It doesn't sort of give you the facts. It's more about speculation. And because these people have come from Boulder, they have their own ideas and opinions. There's a little bit of dark humour in it. One lady said there's no way a 10-year-old brother could have done it. And it intercuts with a scene of various different little boys trying to hammer the crap out of a baby watermelon with a flashlight and doing it very, very well. So there's sort of a very dark undertone to it. But it's fascinating. It's a new way of doing a documentary, and I'm all on board for this.
So it's interesting. That documentary sounds quite a bit like, did you ever see The Act of Killing, which was about those Indonesian people who were involved in killing Indonesian citizens and so on?
I did.
Yeah,
yes.
That was brutal. And the documentarian got them to enact the scenes, like these tortures and murders they really mm-hmm. committed in real life, and he got them to act them out on the documentary, and they were doing it with glee.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
God, that sounds a bit mm-hmm. gone dark again now, guys. Yeah.
I think it was nominated for the Oscar, that documentary. I can't remember if it won or not, but it was good.
Mm. Sounds pretty dark.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, Netflix are pioneering with the true crime documentaries at the moment. I think there's one coming up soon about a nun in the 60s.
Ooh.
But
it's my favourite topic.
But I'm sure we'll be mentioning that at some point in the future. So that's where I'm leaving it.
Look forward to Nuncast coming soon.
Mine's a documentary too, Ben.
Oh,
snap.
The Shark is Still Working. So I got this off eBay for £2, the DVD, and it's a whole two-hour documentary on the making of Jaws. Now, this is, for me, an incredible eye-opener because it's all the production team talking about what really happened. And as you know, even on the Blu-ray for the official Universal release of Jaws, we don't ever hear much from Spielberg himself. They've got him on this documentary talking about what happened on the actual sets and how it was writing the script as they went along. But not just that, he's talking about how he shot different scenes, what the pressure of overrunning by 6 months, the budget not almost doubling. But he also talks on sets. They've got footage of him while he's filming it,
nice.
Talking about what's going on. And you can see that he's getting really frustrated. They've got early footage of Shaw coming on to audition as Quint, and he's actually on set, and he's talking with Dreyfuss all about basically getting pissed on set and how he's ashamed of himself for doing the whole big iconic speech drunk and having to reshoot the whole thing a separate night and how he'd let down the whole team. It is unbelievable. Roy Schneider's there talking all about how his affair that was going to be in the original film was going to be with his wife and Dreyfuss, but they cut it and they just didn't know if it would work or not. It's the best documentary I've seen, and I think I'm an expert when it comes to Jaws. This totally taught me everything that I never knew about this film.
That's
the best £2 I've ever spent.
Really? That sounds amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's so good that they got all that original footage.
Yeah.
Where did they unearth that from, if that's not been seen before?
God knows.
Is that just in a vault somewhere?
Somewhere. Yeah. They just spent ages on it. And then they go to, actually, Amity Island now, and they spend time talking to the locals that were extras in the film, and they get to speak to the guy that's acting out Brody, and he's doing the hand movements of his dad and all that. He's now about 40 and he's sitting there doing the face and the screwed up face, and it's so weird because a 40-year-old man is obviously not that kid, but you see it as soon as he does the face and the claw, you think that is exactly him. And he said it's his bar trick. When he's in a bar and the locals are coming in and drinking, he'll just look around at people and do the face, and they're like, oh my god, it's you. But it's amazing, dude. Honestly, it's the best documentary I've seen, and it's available on Amazon and everywhere. It's not like you can't track it down. It's
sounds
amazing.
Great.
That sounds superb. Yeah. I'm going to finish off with a book. I'm in the middle of reading a book at the minute called The Other Hollywood, The Uncensored Oral History of the Porn Industry. And it's written by Legs McNeil and Jennifer Osborne. And it's an utterly, utterly fascinating book because it doesn't just look at pornography as the titillation that it is. It looks at it as an industry, as the name would suggest. And it takes the form of an oral history. No jokes about that, Mark.
You said tittery as titillation. Tits and oral.
Let him have it.
Oh, I'm going home. So it takes the form of an oral history, which means there's no prose in there. All of it is interviews, and it interviews people who are luminaries within film. So it interviews people like Roger Ebert, who is the greatest film critic of all time, John Walters, a famous film director. But then obviously it takes interviews with famous pornographers, directors, you know, stars, etc. And it's absolutely fascinating, and it tracks the pornography industry chronologically from the mid-60s when it began all the way up to when the book was written, which was in the mid-2000s. And it's not just about the industry, it's all about everything that went around it. So, for example, in the 70s, pornography in America was controlled by the mafia. And the FBI knew this, but they couldn't get inroads because the mafia, they always have buffers. They always have people who control their business that are sort of one or two people removed from them. So there's a lot about how the FBI started to put people, their agents, undercover in the porn industry, pretending to be porn barons so that they could then get to the distributors and then get hold of the crime families. So all the big crime families, Gambino, Bonanno, Columbo, they were all involved in porn, and these undercover detectives get them and stuff. And it's absolutely fascinating. But of course it is about sex, it is about pornography as well, so it's not for the faint-hearted, it's not a book for prudes, because there are very very literal, you know, literal acts, sexual acts that
sounds
are described.
Sounds degrading.
Yeah, it's very degrading, Mark, you know, it's not for a family podcast.
I'm not going to read it.
So it's not for the faint-hearted, it's not for people who can't handle frank descriptions of sex, but it's utterly fascinating for not just the industry itself, but what went on around it, and I'm sure you're both fans of the film Boogie Nights.
Incredible.
One of my favourites.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film, and the lead character in that, played by Mark Wahlberg, Dirk Diggler, is based on a legendary porn star called John Holmes, and a lot of this book talks about John Holmes coming through the ranks in the 70s and how his life went wrong, and from being the biggest in the industry, and I mean that in both senses of the word, to then, you know, becoming a guy who was strung out on drugs and was robbing his friends and ended up dying of AIDS-related illnesses. And this is absolutely is AIDS cast now. It's just wall-to-wall AIDS. Sorry, listeners, I'm really sorry about this. But it's utterly, utterly fascinating. Great book.
I really want to read that.
He said he came through the ranks as well.
Jesus Christ.
I'm grasping everything I can, like many of them did. It sounds very... You've not finished it, though?
No. Oh. I haven't finished it.
I haven't
finished off yet.
Oh. Let us know on the next episode how it is.
Yeah.
If it was a happy ending or not.
Brilliant. More of this on the next episode.
Speaking of the next episode, what we got coming up? Mark, what film are we reviewing?
Oh, just a small one called Alien Continent?
Nope.
Confident?
Nope. I did this on purpose, Gemma. I threw him under the bus because I knew he was going to get it wrong.
Alien. The new Alien film.
No, keep going. You'll get it.
Convenant.
No.
Convent.
No.
With the nuns.
No. That's not the documentary about
Save
nuns.
Me, Gemma. I'm drowning.
It's Alien Covenant.
Oh, that one.
I mean, you've, how many times have you seen Indiana Jones, the Ark of the Covenant? You're aware of this word, surely.
I know. I just keep saying the new Alien film.
I just like the fact that Alien was going to have like a bladder problem with Alien Incontinence.
That would have, imagine that.
Hello, Hollywood. Well,
we're seeing the new Alien film.
We are.
I'm very excited for.
Oh, good Lord. Whose topic was it? It was you, Gemma. What
it's
is it?
Mine. It's top three addiction films. So addiction, I'm thinking drugs, drink, sex, gambling. If it's an addiction, I want to hear all about it.
That's going to take some real research. I'm looking forward to digging into that one.
I can't Google just top three addiction films for that one. Oh, shit. I'm going to have to do work.
Sorry.
Mark, what are we masturbating over? Or who, not what. It's not that book I've been reading. Who are we masturbating over?
The one and only Denzel Washington, which is crazy.
It's going to be a big one.
He's got so many good films.
One
Oscars. Oh, yeah, he's got some absolute dog egg in his category. Yeah, so,
I'm not looking forward to that bit, but yeah. It's good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It should be a good one.
Oh, and who's rewatched? I think it was yours as well, wasn't it?
I'm going to keep talking.
Yeah, why not?
The one and only Blue Velvet, which I believe is not a rewatch for you.
No, never
seen
it before.
So you're going in dry, which is going to be very interesting.
Indeed. And we'll be playing the second round of our latest quiz, which is completely original and hasn't been ripped off from anywhere. Whose tagline is it anyway? And I'm the games master on that one. And we'll also be taking listener questions and giving away an absolute shedload of prizes. All the good stuff that you've come to expect from the Skip to the End podcast. Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow, 70's done.
Roll on 71. See you in 2 weeks.